chance to appear.
Hi, I'm Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage in Salinas. Let me help you fine-tune your future real estate plans. The price of gasoline is through the roof, but interest rates are still near all-time lows. Don't let this opportunity pass you by. Give me a call today at 757-0436, 757-0436. I'm Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage, and looking forward to working with you.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
News. I'm Lou Miliano. Okay, relax. Your BlackBerry will continue to work. But for a while there, the omnipresent handheld emailer was in limbo with NTP, the developer of the technology, suing Research in Motion, the developer of the BlackBerry, for $126 million. Plus, late today, Judge James Spencer in Richmond, Virginia, dismissed the suit as NTP and RIM came to an agreement, letting RIM continue production and operation with a $612.5 million payment to NTP. CBS News technology consultant Larry Maggett says for you and me and everybody else in the world, it means the BlackBerry will continue to work.
Now they're free to develop better software and to expand the device and to market it. They really can go forward and try to make the BlackBerry an even more popular device and work hard to fend off the rivals, including Microsoft.
It's believed Microsoft will have something along the BlackBerry line to unveil next Thursday. 8 years, 4 months in prison, the longest term ever given a congressman. That was the price. Kickbacks and bribes, the way to get there. The way to smooth the route to fat Defense Department contracts through California Congressman Randy Duke Cunningham, now former congressman. And Cunningham didn't come cheap. The scandal's being described as corruption on a scale unparalleled in the United States Congress. But it all came crashing down with Cunningham's guilty plea in this afternoon's sentencing in the San Diego court.
I'm Bob Fuss on Capitol Hill. Previous bribery cases involving members of Congress pale in comparison, both in terms of the amount and the brazenness. Cunningham, a Republican from San Diego, admitted taking $2.5 million in cash and luxury goods for getting defense contracts for the companies that paid him. He got a yacht, a Rolls Royce, expensive homes, and antiques to furnish them. There was even a price list on congressional stationery in which Cunningham indicated the more he got, the bigger the contracts he'd deliver.
But it's all over now in a San Diego court this afternoon. Cunningham was sentenced to 8 years, 4 months in prison. You don't have to know what they're saying to know they're angry. And their anger was wrapped around President Bush. These demonstrators in Karachi, as Mr. Bush arrived in Pakistan to show solidarity with Islamabad in the war on terror, CBS News correspondent Mark Noller is traveling with the president.
Under cover of darkness, Air Force One safely flew President and Mrs. Bush to Pakistan. The shades were drawn on the windows, and the lights on the aircraft were turned off as security precautions against an attack from the ground. The White House had originally said Mr. Bush would fly here on Saturday morning, but that may have been a ruse. As another security tactic, it was not clear whether the Bushes boarded a limousine or a helicopter to ride to the heavily guarded U.S. Embassy compound where they were to spend the night. Mark Noller, CBS News, with the president in Islamabad.
2 days in a row now, stocks were down, though not by much. The Dow slipped 4, the Nasdaq off 8.5. This is CBS News.
Get the good stuff.
Hey, this is Michael Waltrip, drive the number 55 Napa race car. A lot of people don't know this about me, but I'm quite a hat collector. That's why Napa is helping me collect as many hats as I can, starting with yours. Just bring any old hat into your local Napa Auto Parts store and swap it for a brand new Napa racing hat. The same hat me and my race team wear at the track. Bring in your old hat today and drive home looking like a winner. Napa, get the good stuff.
Get the good stuff.
NBC Fridays just got interesting. Tonight on Deal or No Deal, they're playing for $3 million. Then Vegas makes its big move to Friday night.
I love Vegas!
And then, the average age of a New York assistant DA is only 28.
I'm sorry, this is my first trial.
You don't say.
Young prosecutors with one thing in common. Conviction. The premiere of Conviction right after Deal or No Deal and Vegas, NBC tonight.
The family just didn't buy it. Their teen was alleged to have had a blood condition that led to his death. But a videotape also showed he got a beating by guards at a Florida boot camp for troubled kids. CBS News correspondent Peter King says now a new autopsy has been ordered to get to the bottom of it.
Robert Anderson couldn't believe what he saw as he watched video of his son's beating.
He was trying to do what they was to tell what they told him to do, but they still kicked him, beat him, punched him. And the nurse stood around and do nothing.
Martin Anderson later collapsed and died. His family outraged when the medical examiner said a blood condition caused his death. Now the boy's body will be exhumed, and a new medical examiner and an independent pathologist will take a second look. A state investigation continues. So far, none of the guards have been arrested or fired. Peter King, CBS News, Orlando.
Details sketchy right now, but this we know, a Navy plane has crashed in northeastern Oregon. But witnesses say four parachutes came to life in this blue sky. Lou Miliano, CBS News.
NBC Fridays just got interesting. Tonight on Deal or No Deal, they're playing for $3 million. Then Vegas makes its big move to Friday night.
Love Vegas!
And then, the average age of a New York assistant DA is only 28.
I'm sorry, this is my first trial.
You don't say.
Young prosecutors with one thing in common. Conviction. The premiere of Conviction right after Deal or No Deal and Vegas, NBC tonight.
Sweet! I've been waiting for lunch all day!
Me too! Natalie, I'll trade my apple for your potato chips.
I don't know, Matthew, my potato chips or your cookie?
Let's see. Billy, what's that?
Rich chocolate Ovaltine!
Rich chocolate Ovaltine!
An apple and my gummy bears for the Ovaltine?
No way!
Potato chips and grape juice for the rich chocolate Ovaltine?
No way!
Two cookies, bubblegum, and my Hershey's chocolate milk?
Double no way!
Aww! More Ovaltine, please!
Banks and banks of humming machinery. I've never seen so many knobs. We're going to have to do something, Charlie. Try pushing that button now. No? How about that one?
No,
not that one either. I know. I'll try pushing this one. Hold my hat, would you? There's a good fella.
Uh-oh, not that button. That's the one that starts the Peter B. Collins Show. We are live up and down the left coast, live on KRXA 540, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. We are live in vivo on KGOE 1480, Eureka, Arcata, Humboldt County. And we're going to take you on a ride virtually around the world today, hitting some of the trouble spots and analyzing the actions of the President of the United States. He ran away from Washington this week because he couldn't handle another Cheney hunting trip or a port deal. And he jumped right into the frying pan, snuck into Afghanistan, stopped off in India, and now he's in Pakistan. On our program today, we're going to take a look at one of the most troubled spots in the world, Darfur in the Sudan. Some of the refugees now spilling over into Chad. And action is finally starting to happen. The U.S. Senate passed a resolution today, and the United Nations is working on some new stopgap measures. In our 3:30 segment, we'll be joined by Dr. Ali Dinar. I didn't repeat myself. His first name is Ali, and his last name is Ali Dinar. And he is the outreach director for the African Studies Center at the University of Pennsylvania. He was born and raised in Darfur. So we'll get his impressions on the situation and the world's response between 3:30 and 4. Then Dr. Arjun Makajan. We've got some tongue-twister names today. I'm going to have to work on this. Arjun Makajan, who is a nuclear expert and also a native of the nation of India. He'll be joining us on the program between 4 and 4:30 today, and we're going to talk about the deal that the president made with the Prime Minister of India, Prime Minister Singh. And all I can say is, if I were Iran, I'd look at that and say, yeah, I want one just like that. We're also going to see if the Islamic cartoon controversy has died down. We're going to talk with Shahid Mahmood. He is based in Montreal, and he is a cartoonist, a political cartoonist. We're going to get his thoughts on the issues coming up between 4:30 and 5. Our weekly visit with Assemblyman John Laird, the Democrat from Santa Cruz who chairs the Assembly Budget Committee and is on the special committee, which is negotiating with the governor over the proposed bond packages. He'll be with us in the 5 o'clock segment. The big question is, will Arnold actually keep his word and not go to Columbus, Ohio, for the Arnold Classic Weightlifting and Bodybuilding Supplement Show. We'll find out in our 5 o'clock segment if Arnold actually does stick around to deal with the details of his proposed bond package. And as usual, Brad Friedman joins us. He's the proprietor of bradblog.com. He'll be with us coming up about 5:20 today, and he's got late-breaking news on Sabelle Edmonds, the whistleblower whose case we have championed on my programs over the last few years. She blew the whistle at the FBI and was treated to a very unusual gag order. And she's now saying, damn it, I want to speak. So we'll get that update and others from Brad Friedman. You can catch up on his work at bradblog.com. But to kick off the show today, we have Jeffrey Feldman. He is the proprietor of a blog as well. It's frameshopisopen.com. Jeffrey, welcome back to the PBC show.
Thanks, Peter.
How are you today?
I'm doing great.
Good. I want to talk about the post on your blog about impeachment. It's very powerful, and I think your analysis brings some new details for people to think about. First up, I want to ask if you had a chance to go to the Case for Impeachment discussion group that was sponsored by Harper's Magazine in New York last night.
No, I actually did not make it to that group.
Okay.
To that, unfortunately, I was at another panel,
mm-hmm.
Which was about blogging and democracy, so I wasn't able to go to that.
Okay. Well, I thought it was an interesting event, and of course, as you cite in the blog, every day now the buzz about impeachment grows. In fact, you posted the results of some Google searches just, what, about 24 hours apart, and saw that the number of references to impeachment has been growing very quickly.
The number of references to impeachment, that's right, were growing for a variety of reasons, but mostly because there were some local state organizations in California, in your state, that were bringing motions to impeach the president, which apparently is one of the constitutional procedures that can unfold. Doesn't necessarily need to be a procedure that's brought from the floor of the Congress. It can also be brought from the states. So there was a story about I believe it was the San Francisco board that brought articles, and that hit the AP wire, and it exploded in the press in the past 72 hours. There was a lot of discussion about impeachment.
And I'm sure, Jeffrey, from the other coast, you visualize San Francisco as this bastion of liberal and progressive values, but the Board of Supervisors has been ridiculed by the local Chronicle newspaper, by several people, editorialists as well as columnists, calling them, you know, kind of juvenile for doing this, and I don't agree at all. I do understand that it's a resolution. It's not an ordinance, not a law. It simply reflects the sense of the Board of Supervisors in San Francisco, and that sense reflects the sentiments of a lot of us here in the in California. And San Francisco isn't first. Santa Cruz County, which is in our coverage area, as well as Humboldt County in the Eureka area, they passed these resolutions, parse the term impeachment. And let me give you a minute or two here to describe the different interpretations of that word, depending on who you're talking to and who they're listening to.
It's a really interesting concept, because if you go to the dictionary, and I like to go to dictionary.com online, and you look up the word impeachment, what you get is a very technical concept, this notion that when you impeach someone, you're actually initiating a procedure, initiating in the case of impeaching a president. About the definition is how different that is, how different in its most precise sense that is from what most Americans mean when they use the phrase impeach. When most Americans talk about impeaching, they are literally referring to the act of firing the president. They are talking about removing him from office and throwing him out. So there is this real radical divide between what the technical term is and what people mean when they actually say it. So when impeachment starts to enter into the media and into popular discussions about politics, what happens is that pressure starts to mount in political debate for removal of the president from office, not initiation of this procedure, which, you know, as we just discussed, has a level of complexity.
Mm-hmm.
So when you take that,
people are moving forward on both of those tracks at this time.
Absolutely, they're moving forward. And what makes the whole notion of impeaching, what happened in California so incredibly important, is that most people understand that it's not possible to initiate these proceedings until there is Democratic control of the Congress. And even when there's Democratic control of the Congress, it may not necessarily be possible to do that.
Yes.
So what we're talking about is a very important turn in the debate, and at a key moment in the calendar right now, because we're heading into 2006, when what's happening is that sentiment is slowly turning against the president and putting a lot of pressure on the Republican Party as they try to maintain hold of the House of Representatives. So you have a message, really, in the concept of impeachment that is speaking to people who are thinking about what they're going to do when they go to the polls, and it's forcing, or it's going to force, the GOP to respond in the most defensive way, which is really to the advantage of Democrats. If the Republicans believe that there is mounting pressure, mounting talk of throwing the president out of office, then that is going to force them to come up with some type of strategy to distance themselves from the president. They're going to break ranks, and they're going to be in chaos, and that will have a very positive effect for the Democrats running for office.
Right. So we do not need to achieve the technical goal of an impeachment process in the near term. In my view, it's sufficient to galvanize people around the concept of impeachment, and that's where we'll pick up as we continue in just a moment. Jeffrey Feldman is our guest. If you want to talk with him, get on the line right now at 831-899-5792 or call me toll-free at 1-888-579-2540. His website is frameshopisopen.com. That's frameshopisopen.com. Why don't you zip in there if you've got access right now, and you can take a look during the break. We'll continue in just a moment right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's tax time again, and there's one progressive tax preparer in the Monterey Bay area who specializes in tax returns for W-2 and self-employed working people. Jim Moore Income Tax specializes in preparing tax returns that maximize your refund and, through electronic filing, get you that refund as soon as you need it. In 24 hours, 2 weeks, or 3 weeks, the choice is yours. The personnel of Jim Moore Income Tax have been helping the hardworking Spanish-speaking residents of the Central Coast with immigration and tax preparation services for more than 30 years. You can get your tax return professionally prepared and electronically filed by bilingual tax professionals at a very reasonable fee. Need your tax refund tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today. Jim Moore Income Tax at 30 Alexander Street in downtown Watsonville, just 2 blocks from the Central Plaza. Be sure to bring a copy of your 2004 federal and California returns, W-2 1099 info for 2005. Need your tax refund tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today. 30 Alexander Street, downtown Watsonville. Join R.J. Moyer for his new weekend show, About College Funding, this Saturday at 10 a.m. on KRXA 540. R.J. Moyer brings to the microphone a unique perspective on the benefits of a college education, and he shares with you his knowledge on how to substantially reduce your out-of-pocket college expenses.
This is R.J. Moyer. Join me for About College Funding, Saturday morning at 10 on KRXA 540, sponsored in part by The Potting Shed in Aptos.
Every Sunday morning at 10, listen to Rock Roller Real Estate. The number one Sunday morning Bay Area real estate show is now on KRXA 540.
If you want to learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling high-end homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are, this is the show for you. Rock Roller Real Estate, the Bay Area's number one Sunday morning real estate show, now covering the Central Coast. For more information on how to become a guest, call 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey and the Old Granary Building, just 2 blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy together are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. Research and common sense show that children learn by playing, and the caring management and staff at Thinker Toys have 37 years of experience helping parents and grandparents choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. So whether you're birthday shopping or simply want to show your love, a gift from Thinker Toys is a way to let someone know you care enough to shop for the very best. With an outstanding selection of Thomas the Tank engines and tracks, puzzles, board games, and children's books, all very reasonably priced, you can't go wrong with a gift from Thinker Toys. So stop by the beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos, or the just renovated Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily from 10 to 7.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 3:21 on this Friday afternoon. Will impeachment rock the nation sometime soon? Or is it just wishful thinking? Well, we're talking with Jeffrey Feldman. He blogs at frameshopisopen.com and focuses on framing language and related issues. And Jeffrey, as we discussed in the first segment, there are these two tracks. There's a kind of populist track of people who use the term impeachment to mean just throw the bums out, and they're not so focused on the mechanics of the process. And then there are people like Congressman Conyers, who wrote a lengthy piece that was published in December, which is a detailed indictment of the Bush-Cheney administration, and lacking the votes or the majority status to push through an actual impeachment process, he called for their censure. And building on that, the Center for Constitutional Rights in New York published just this week a book from Melville House for under $10, called Articles of Impeachment Against George W. Bush. And this is the detailed technical and legal basis for an impeachment process. So we see these two tracks moving along, and I'll cite one other, which is impeachpac.org, which is a website and a PAC set up by Bob Furtick of Democrats.com and After Downing Street. He's a very active guy. And their whole focus is impeachment achieved through changing the Congress. And so they do approach it in a practical way. But I see these two tracks combining to produce what could be the unifying theme for the Democratic Party in these midterm elections. Your thoughts?
A great concept. I mean, there are basically two themes. When we talk about the way that communications are organized in elections, you're either running a theme for change or you're running a theme for continuity. And the question that that the campaigns are going to be asking is how are Democrats going to get out the concept of change? And impeachment provides a logical frame for doing that, because when you invoke the popular conception of impeachment, the idea you talked about is throwing the bums out, or literally just remove them from office, throw them out, you are instantly triggering in people's minds this much more basic theme that you talk about of change. So I think it's an excellent idea. The difficulty, I believe, that presents the Democrats is not getting too mired down in technical talk, which is a problem that a lot of Democrats have in Washington, D.C., because the culture of discussion is very different as it goes on in Congress than it goes on the streets of the country. So Democrats need to remember that when they are talking amongst themselves, it's important for them to be on the same page in terms of the technical aspects of the process. But when they look up, when they're on C-SPAN, when they're in front of their constituents, they need to invoke the strong colloquial meaning of the term throw them out in order to accent that campaign theme.
And to misappropriate a quote from Congressman John Murtha, who was not talking about this subject, he said that, you know, related to Iraq, that the American people are way out in front of our elected leaders. And to me, this is a similar situation, particularly when you look at the Democratic Party. They seem scared to death of the idea of impeachment. And when we have elected officials on and callers or I will use the I word, it's interesting to see them turn tail as fast as possible.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it that the Democrats in Congress are they're still not quite as confident as they should be. The public seems much more confident, particularly as regards to the past couple of weeks with the incident with the ports, which the White House is referring to simply as a business deal. And while we had members of the Senate and some members of the Congress on both sides of the aisle standing up and saying that this was a matter of national security, but still there seems to be that reluctance in the part of the Congress, whereas the American public is literally outraged and way out in front of their elected officials on this matter.
Yeah. Jeffrey, let's put our speculation caps on right now, because I got an email from Donna at Big Sur, and she says, could the Republican aristocracy turn on Bush? He then becomes the scapegoat, and they become some kind of courageous representatives of revealing his mistakes, incompetence, and or illness, and use the entire mess as political clout in the 2006 elections because of their so-called honesty. Well, that's a pivot that should have taken place months ago, but, you know, consider it. Is it possible that Republicans could actually turn on the president and run against him this year?
I think anything's possible, but the problem, as I see it, in running against the president in 2006 is that the candidates that are slowly moving up to the top of the pile, in particular somebody like John McCain for the Republicans, they have not given any sign that they are becoming hostile towards the White House. And so I think that a lot of elected Republicans would really put themselves in a difficult situation if they wanted to do that. And I believe that the Republican Party, you know, the people who are looking towards 2008 and are not up for election in 2006 would be very, very concerned if that became the overall theme. But obviously, you can't put anything past them. It's more likely that what Republicans are going to do is what they've done continuously in the past, you know, a few elections, is that they are going to try to make the claim that Democrats are unpatriotic because they're calling for withdrawal from Iraq. They're going to say that we're undermining the troops and that we're not patriotic, that we're treasonous and so forth. And they're also going to play questions having to do with prejudice against Americans who are homosexual, issues of adopting, you know, gay couples adopting children, and questions having to do with what the Republican Party calls religion, but what most Americans don't see it that way. Those have been their successful cards that they've played in the past, so it seems more likely that they would go with that. So to Donna, I would say, don't give up hope just yet.
All right, let's sneak in a quick call from Dave in Humboldt. Hi, Dave. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show with Jeffrey Feldman. Just a minute here.
I so much appreciate this program. But, you know, in the last week, I have been hearing more of my right-wing acquaintances saying, I can't believe they did that, because for now 4 years, they've been listening to Axis of Evil, Fear, Islamic whatnot, and now they're putting the ports in the hands of the very same folks, and they are not living with this at all. And I think that may include a number of congressmen and senators. It may be they're ready to throw them under the bus.
And we're going to talk later about the nuclear deal with India, and I think that that has the potential to be another Dubai ports deal, a wedge issue that separates Republicans from the White House. Jeffrey?
I think that the Dubai deal definitely has potential, although it seems that this is a quid pro quo situation where the White House seems to have some kind of secret dossier, and they were bringing one Republican leader at a time into a back room.
Yeah, Bill Frist says he's been better informed now. He's okay. Jeffrey, I'm out of time. Thank you for joining us. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you, Peter.
Visit the blog, frameshopisopen.com. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
We all have dreams, and dreams inspire possibilities in our lives. For many of us, one of our principal dreams is to live in harmony with our natural environment, to convert that sacred space we call home into a physical representation of our true nature.
Hi, I'm Peter Eichhorn, owner of Eichhorn Incorporated, a company dedicated to designing and creating of ecologically sound masonry projects to fulfill your particular desires and needs. Let me work with you to make your dreams real and your dwelling an enchanting, personalized home, one with nature, a true reflection of your inner desires. Make this new year special, and let me assist you in your quest. I have a lifetime of experience, I'm honest, my prices are affordable, and I love what I do. Call me at 393-1300. That's 393-1300.
You're invited to tune in to Talking Matters with Dr. Joan Kenley, Saturday at 3 on KRXA 540. You won't want to miss the show on Whose Body Is It Anyway? Whose Body Is It Anyway is the title of Joan's acclaimed book, published by Newmarket Press and available on Amazon and other internet bookstores. You'll hear Joan and her guests explore smart, alternative, and traditional health choices for your total well-being. The idea is to stay healthy as long as you can, knowing as much as you can. Both men and women will want to hear about the medical controversy and confusion you're faced with day in and day out. You'll hear the real story behind some of the headlines that often lead you to dangerous health conclusions. Joan will cover what doctors you can trust, the latest in the hormone therapy media misinformation mess, and what you may not know about breast cancer treatments. Talking Matters with Dr. Joan Kenley, Saturdays at 3 on KRXA 540.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
It's 3:33. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm your humble host, Peter B. And as we speak, halfway around the world, people are dying in Darfur in the Sudan. And it doesn't make enough news in this country. And it's tragic. During this half hour, we're going to get an update on the situation from a man who was born in Sudan, raised in Darfur. He is Dr. Ali B. Ali Dinar, and he's Outreach Director for the African Studies Center at the University of Pennsylvania. Dr. Ali Dinar, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thank you very much. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, it's certainly an honor to speak with you, and it's tragic, as I mentioned, that in this part of the world, so many people are able to ignore the plight of the refugees in Darfur and the very dicey situation there. And what comes to mind for me, Dr. Ali Dinar, is a comment made by Vice President Cheney just a few weeks back, before his hunting accident gave him a new type of unwanted celebrity. He was on the NewsHour with Jim Lehrer on PBS, and he was asked about Darfur, and he dodged the question and essentially said that he feels the United States is doing enough about the problems there and the significant loss of life and the prospect that that will continue. I don't imagine you share that point of view.
I think like the United States is doing more than other people in the Western Hemisphere are doing. And that is in terms of putting proposals and trying to move the international community in doing something for Darfur.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a big difference between rhetoric and real action. And in that case, so the United States and other countries fell in the same level with regard to the issue of Darfur, and even the United Nations, is that like they were saying things, but like not much of an action. And that is why we have this continuous cycle of violence.
Yes.
Up to this minute.
Now today, just a couple of hours ago, the United States Senate passed a resolution urging the Bush administration to take action on Darfur. And a couple of hours later, UN Secretary General Kofi Annan asked the world, and indirectly the United States, for immediate air support for the African Union forces that are attempting to deal with the conflict in Darfur. So this at least is a little bit promising that there are steps being taken. But the reason that Kofi Annan is asking for this air support is that they believe that it's going to take at least another 9 months before UN forces can enter Sudan to back up the African Union forces. And to me, that's not an acceptable delay.
Yeah, exactly. That is what everyone is saying. That is not acceptable delay, because 9 months is too long. And also bear in mind that the African Union forces in Darfur, they don't have mandate to protect civilians. So if the real force behind our intervention is to protect civilians, that has to be done now, right mm-hmm. now, and not to wait for another month or for another week, because time is the essence. And we have to learn from history. And even from the response we have to tragic situations, is that like the fairest, the urgency in intervention is needed right from the beginning, because that will save life, and that also show that we care about people all over the globe.
We're talking with Dr. Ali B. Ali Dinar. He's Outreach Director for the African Studies Center at the University of Pennsylvania. And as we mentioned, he was born and raised in Sudan and in Darfur in particular. If you could, Doctor, could you help our listeners out a little bit with just some baseline information about how this struggle has evolved between the government seated in Khartoum and the Janjaweed militia, which seems to have pretty much unfettered control over the Darfur region?
This is like it's always good to have like some kind of historical or background information, but at the same point also we have to know like this background information has nothing to do with the face which you are witnessing now of this escalation of violence, and mainly by targeting civilians. We have just to know that Darfur is a remote place in western part of Sudan.
Mm-hmm.
It has its share of problems, negligence from the central government, and being underdeveloped for years since annexation to Sudan in 1916. And there was some kind of conflicts among some ethnic groups. And later on in 2002, some of these groups, they said they just realized that the real enemy is the government. And so they changed their rhetoric to be political. and they call for more share in power, more share in wealth. And then this caught the government by surprise. And the government said instead of reaching any political deal with this movement, it tried to end it by force. And the government forces in the beginning, they were caught by surprise. Big losses being inflicted on them. And at that point, the government turned to its arsenal of fighting back. And that's by recruiting militias from Darfur to fight the political insurgency. Mm-hmm. And in doing that, in recruiting militias, which now came to be known as the Janjaweed, this is not something new in the history of Sudan, and specifically with this government, because the same policy of militia, civilian militias, fighting parallel to the government, terrorizing innocent civilians. This was done for a long time since this government came to power in 1989, in the war which ended just last year in January 2005 in the southern part of Sudan.
Let me just clarify what you just said. You talked about the militias working in parallel with the government.
Exactly.
Describe that relationship, because it's hard for us to discern from here exactly what the interaction of these players is, because on the one hand, it does appear that the Janjaweed and perhaps some of the other militias have the tacit support of the central government. At the same time, it's not a total alliance.
Yes, exactly. Because people have to know that, like, these militias, which came to be known as the Janjaweed, they were people from Darfur. They were indigenous people in Darfur, although they have some brethren, they came from the border from Chad, because the same ethnic groups, some of the same ethnic groups which live in Darfur, you will find them also in Chad. But, like, these groups were small groups. They have traditional animosity with other non-Arab groups which live in the same area. They are poor. The government knows this fact. The government just said that this is maybe very vulnerable group. Why not just give them arms, give them license to kill and loot? And then work with us as our allies.
Mm-hmm.
And from that on, all what we know is that, like, it's not like attacking against a military installation, whether helped by the government or by the opposition, but specifically targeting civilians. And by targeting civilians, you create a whole mess in the region, and the result is that the whole region of Darfur is now littered with refugee camps inside Darfur, outside, mm-hmm. and even in neighboring countries. So this is the tactic in which the government is used. And in this case, like, you cannot look at it in isolation with other kinds of militias in which the Sudanese government also recruited ethnically. Because, like, this group is not like just from, and I mean, you have to select what kind of a group which could be prone to be a militia.
Mm-hmm.
Groups which have, like, traditional kind of animosity with their neighbors, and you just play on that. And we have just seen in other places of the world when there is this violence being ethnically based, with it, not only in Darfur, but also in other parts in Africa, like, say, in Rwanda or in Burundi, mm-hmm. or even in Europe, among the Serb and the Bosnians and the Croat.
Right.
When you unleash this ethnic base of a fight, I mean, there is no end to it.
Mm-hmm.
And what we are just seeing in Darfur here is just that same kind of violence, which is unleashed by the government.
Doctor, we need to take a break here, Doctor, and we'll return in a moment and talk further with you.
Okay.
My guest is Dr. Ali B. Ali Dinar, Outreach Director for the African Studies Center at the University of Pennsylvania, born and raised in Darfur in the Sudan. And if you have a question or comment, you're welcome to join us. On the Central Coast, the number is 831-899-5792. It's a local call, 899-5792. You can call me toll-free from Eureka or anywhere else within the sound of my voice at 1-888-579-2540. That's 888-579-2540. If you prefer email, drop me a note, peter@krxa540.com. That's peter@krxa540.com. We'll continue in just a moment. It's 3:45, and you're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hello, I'm Jose Mendez.
And I'm Ren Bradley. Please join us on our new show, Labor Matters, on Sunday starting March 5th from 1 to 2 p.m.
We'll be talking about issues of importance to the labor movement and raising awareness of the local struggles of the working men and women of our community.
And, as time permits, state and national issues.
Don't give up the fight.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove has the finest selection of fresh local fruits, veggies, and meats. The Grove Market is also your first stop for delicious artisanal breads and other baked goods, and boasts an outstanding selection of Monterey wines. For competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey, shop at the Grove Market, Monday through Saturday, 8 to 7, 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove. 242 Forest, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
You already know that Joe Rombies serves the best Italian meals this side of Roma. What you may not know is that you can also enjoy Joe Rombies' incomparable cuisine in the comfort of your family room, dining room, or kitchen. And if you're looking for the ideal private room for your next party, look no further than Joe Rombies' La Piccola Casa and La Mia Cucina. For unforgettable meals in a private setting at your place or theirs, call 373-8116 or drop by 17th Street between Lighthouse and Laurel in Pacific Grove.
You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 3:48. Our music of the moment is from British blues man Chris Rea. And this one's called The Road to Hell, which, as you know, is paved with good intentions. We continue our conversation about the dire situation in Darfur, the Sudan, with Dr. Ali B. Ali Dinar. And, Doctor, I'm thinking right now of the visit that Colin Powell made to Darfur, I guess about 3 years ago, maybe 2.5 years ago, when he was still Secretary of State.
Yeah.
And there was a photo op, and, you know, some press releases were issued. But he was quite well aware of the situation there, the number of deaths that had occurred up to that point, and the level of killing that continues to this day. Yet he was unable to persuade the American government, the Bush administration, to take a serious interest in the problems in Darfur as far back as 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, that is right, because like what is happening in Darfur is known to everyone, and even like the before Colin Powell's visit in July 2004, there were all these satellite images about the kind of destruction which happened in Darfur. So nothing is new. And up to this minute, I think here what we could just see, and it is a very bad reality, between what we see is right. This is from the civil societies and NGOs, what kind of a step the international community has to take in order to alleviate the suffering and until the, and stop the genocidal acts in Darfur. And on the other hand, the role of the real doers, the international community in terms of governments and UN, in that the governments pursue their own national interests. And sometimes these national interests, they are really in contradiction with human interests.
Mm-hmm.
So unless there is such kind of a change, all what we could see about what is happening in Darfur could just be viewed as a human tragedy. Because any kind of intervention, any kind of act, people calculate it politically. And maybe because it's being calculated politically, there are a lot of risk. And people, governments judge on that kind of a risk.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why we could just see with all the kind of euphoria and with all the kind of activities, with all activists, like, for example, in the United States, students, faith-based organizations, general, just people, media, and so on. Even yesterday, I saw some part about Darfur in ER. And I think that general interest about the plight of the civilians in Darfur is there, but it was not reciprocated by a political action from our from different governments.
I understand.
To the level that it equates our own concern as citizens.
And, Doctor, when was the last time you were in Darfur?
I was there in July, August. I came from there in 10th of August, just last year. I was in Darfur, and I went to the same places in which, like, Condoleezza Rice and before her, Colin Powell was went there.
And what did you observe?
I just observed, like, the suffering of the people. And I just saw the same things. All these dignitaries from all over the world, when they visit Darfur, they visit only this one place. But I don't have the chance, and I could not venture in traveling to places from which these people came from.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that that could just be one of the stops of all those dignitaries who, if they really care and they just want to really to take an action and not just a place for telling the media that you have been to Darfur, to go to these places from which those people came from. Just like when we tour a ravaged area by a hurricane or something, we will visit these places by a helicopter. And I don't see that kind of a tour of the just for those dignitaries to see the kind of destruction which is being inflicted on the civilians, you see. And to the extent that, like, I think maybe it's still the level of the real understanding of the real suffering of those people, I don't think it has been touched.
Doctor, from my reading, which is hardly complete, the perception I get is that women and children are the most common victims, that the issues revolve around race, ethnicity, and religion, that this is a struggle between the Arab people of Arab origin who are Muslims who control the government in Khartoum, and the opponents, the victims, are largely Christians of African origin. Is that all correct?
Yeah, maybe that is, with regard to the Christian, maybe that is in the war which ended just last year.
Okay.
That is in the south, in which, like, a sizable people of who profess the Christian faith were in the south. Mm-hmm. But here in Darfur, all people were Muslim, you see. All people were Muslim. Even, like, we have to know that, like, when they call people these Arab and Africans,
mm-hmm.
If you go there, you can't tell the difference who is who, mm-hmm. you see. But, of course, it doesn't matter because it just people, you have to judge someone by his act. So it doesn't matter whether he looks an African or whether he looks an Arab to you. But the war is just being done on this ethnic-based way.
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, like, we have to know very real that those people, whether the Janjaweed or the non-Janjaweed, they live in this area for centuries. Never in the history of this region there was a conflict of such a magnitude. All the past conflicts in Darfur, whenever there was a conflict, the conflict will just consume the place from which this conflict arises, you see.
By the numbers, just to put some frame around it,
mm-hmm.
More than 300,000 people have died in the last 3 years in Darfur.
Exactly.
And it's estimated that more than 2 million people have been forced from their homes and are in the refugee camps that you described.
Exactly, yeah. And there are more people outside. And still there are more people, because even these numbers also, we make them as an estimate. And the bottom line is that if you have just looked at any satellite image about the kind of destruction, the location of the refugee camps, you will not find any empty space in the region of Darfur, which is as being saying is the size of a France, without not littered by a refugee camp.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole region is just being a refugee camp.
And we have Doctor, to think... Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, we're tight for time, so let me just turn to this next issue, if I may.
Yeah.
The UN Security Council has agreed to meet within the next 10 days to consider sanctions against Sudan. And I'm curious if you believe that this will have the desired effect.
I think, like, any move which could just scare the government, bring it to its senses, I think it is an act which is welcomed by the Darfurian and the people who are now being displaced.
But in so many cases, we see that sanctions really hit the average people, the unprotected citizens, the hardest, while
yeah.
governments are able to find other ways to pay for their activities.
Yeah, exactly. But it's also symbolic. And I think, like, history also will just tell us, because if we were saying the same rhetoric, what about the apartheid?
Mm-hmm.
Because people could just say, because this will hurt the blacks. And this is like an international effort. So I don't think it will affect the people to the extent that we have to rethink about mm-hmm. what kind of punitive damage which we want to put on the government.
And, Doctor, with just 30 seconds remaining, what would you suggest to our listeners who are concerned about these issues and want to do something about it?
I think for people just to get involved, get educated, reach your representative in the government, local, mm-hmm. state, and the president.
And I would note
do
that
something on Darfur.
In the United States Senate, Barack Obama, a Democrat from Illinois, and somewhat surprising to me, Sam Brownback, who is an ultra-conservative from Kansas,
yeah.
They recently went to Darfur and came back and I believe have led the fight for this Senate resolution that passed today. And so I commend those two senators, and you could direct your advocacy to them. Doctor,
yes.
Thank you very much for joining us. I appreciate your commentary.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Ali Dinar, from the African Studies Center at the University of Pennsylvania. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy together are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. Research and common sense show that children learn by playing, and the caring management and staff at Thinker Toys have 37 years of experience helping parents and grandparents choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. So whether you're birthday shopping or simply want to show your love, a gift from ThinkerToys is a way to let someone know you care enough to shop for the very best. With an outstanding selection of Thomas the Tank engines and tracks, puzzles, board games, and children's books, all very reasonably priced, you can't go wrong with a gift from ThinkerToys. So stop by the beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos, or the just renovated Del Monte Center in Monterey. ThinkerToys is open daily from 10 to 7.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
President Bush arrives in Pakistan where thousands rallied against his visit. For taking bribes, former Congressman Duke Cunningham goes to prison.
Today's sentence is a sad but well-deserved ending to Mr. Cunningham's public career.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Dave Barrett. Anti-Bush protesters in Pakistan had their say. These were in Karachi. They faced this. Tear gas. Fired by police. About 1,000 people tried to head to the U.S. consulate in Karachi. Cops stopped them. Demonstrators in a suicide car bombing a day ago didn't stop President Bush from coming to Pakistan today. But correspondent Mark Noller says it was not a typical arrival.
It was as close to a stealth landing as the 747 that serves as Air Force One can make. Flying into Pakistan at night, the plane's running lights were off and the shades on the windows were drawn. It was an effort to conceal the identity of the world's most recognizable aircraft and keep it from being identified and attacked while on final approach. More security as President and Mrs. Bush stepped off the plane and boarded either a limousine or a helicopter, it was not clear which, for their ride to the U.S. Ambassador's residence where they were spending the night. Mark Noller, CBS News, with the President in Islamabad.
Now this.
This is Charles Osgood of the Osgood File. Many have pondered the reason for Mona Lisa's enigmatic smile. I think the answer is, as Leonardo's model, she was just one of those lucky people who liked her job. Like the accountants at Grant Thornton. Their passion for what they do, their expertise and partner involvement, have made them one of the largest accounting organizations in the world, with member firms in over 100 countries. Maybe that's why their clients are so passionate about them. Grant Thornton, a passion for the business of accounting. This is Charles Osgood. I'll see you on the radio on the Osgood File.
Last year at the PBR World Finals, world champion Justin McBride teamed the Beast.
Folks, Justin McBride has done it.
Now the Beast is back, and revenge will be anything but sweet. Strap yourself in for an all-new season of the PBR Built for Tough Series. The toughest cowboys take on the baddest bulls.
Buzzswinger, this might be his best year ever.
An all-new season of the PBR, Saturday at 9 Eastern and Sunday at 10 Eastern, only on OLN.
The deputy House historian says in terms of dollar amounts, Randall Duke Cunningham is the most corrupt member ever. For taking bribes, Cunningham, the former Southern California congressman, has been sentenced to 8 years and 4 months in prison. Prosecutor Jason Forge spoke in San Diego.
Hopefully, this 100-month sentence that Mr. Cunningham received will help
for that too.
By order of a federal judge, the Pentagon has made public the names of hundreds of detainees, those kept at the Guantanamo Bay facility in Cuba.
317 names, less than half the total number of prisoners held.
Martinez apologized to the judge, her family, and the bank teller she held up. In her words, "Your Honor, I didn't decide to be a bank robber." Judge Gerald Bruce Lee says she made a conscious decision to rob several banks and is lucky nobody died in the process. He calls his sentence of 12 years mighty lenient. Neil Augenstein for CBS News, Alexandria, Virginia.
All four members of an EA-6B Prowler jet aircraft ejected safely. Their plane from Whidbey Island Naval Air Station went down today during a training mission in Oregon. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
NBC Fridays just got interesting. Tonight on Deal or No Deal, they're playing for $3 million. Then Vegas makes its big move to Friday night.
Love Vegas!
And then, the average age of a New York assistant DA is only 28.
I'm sorry, this is my first trial.
You don't say.
Young prosecutors with one thing in common. Conviction. The premiere of Conviction, right after Deal or No Deal and Vegas, NBC tonight.
Know the greatest phrase ever invented in shopping?
No, it's not, I'll just wait in the car. The greatest phrase is, no thanks, I'm just looking. I mean, what freedom, what liberation. What a great way to buy car insurance. In fact, why not do some looking right now? Go to GEICO.com. It's quick, it's easy, and you could save hundreds. You know, saving money looks good on you. GEICO.com. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
The Wire.
It's 4:06. Thanks for joining us today on the Peter B. Collins Show. We're live up and down the left coast. KRXA 540 in Monterey and KGOE 1480 Eureka. I got some good news today about a new station that will be joining our lineup in the next month or so. We'll tell you about it when it's official. Now, as you know, the president decided that things were so hot in Washington after Dick Cheney's hunting accident and then the flap over the Dubai ports deal that he decided to get out of town. Well, to be fair, he planned this trip before all that stuff broke, but probably appreciates getting away from Washington and the United States. He took a secret trip to Afghanistan, and then he dropped into India, where he met with the new Prime Minister, Manmohan Singh, and has announced a historic deal related to nuclear projects in India. And to help us understand the dimensions of this and the origins of it, we've invited Dr. Arjun Makhijani onto our program today. He's president of the Institute for Energy and Environmental Research in Tacoma Park, Maryland, which is roughly equivalent to Berkeley. They call it the People's Republic of Tacoma Park inside the Beltway there. And he attended Berkeley. He got his Ph.D. in engineering at the University of California, specializing in nuclear fusion. He is the principal editor of the book Nuclear Wastelands, a global guide to nuclear weapons production and its health and environmental effects, which was published in July 1995. And he got nominated for a Pulitzer Prize for that work. He served as a consultant to numerous organizations, including the Tennessee Valley Authority, the Lawrence Berkeley Lab, and several agencies of the United Nations. Dr. Makhijani, welcome to our program today.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Well, I need to understand how all this works, and I appreciate your expertise on these issues. And what we have here is a deal that was announced in a news conference, and the details have started to be reported here in the last 24 or 36 hours. But if you could, can you define for us in brief terms what the President of the United States agreed to with Prime Minister Singh?
Yes. Let me give you a little bit of background for 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
The Indians decided not to sign the Non-Proliferation Treaty.
Correct.
In the 60s because they felt it was discriminatory, rightly so, I think, that it created sort of nuclear weapons haves and nuclear weapons have-nots.
Mm-hmm.
Then the Indians tested their own weapons in 1998, and for a while people said we don't want to deal with the Indians, and the Indians seem to have had a goal, abandoned their long-held goal of universal nuclear disarmament, which they talked about, and then slowly just wanted to join the club of, mm-hmm. of nuclear weapon states and also to get nuclear technology. What they're after really is not so much nuclear power technology. India is short of uranium and is really using very low-grade supplies. And so long as they are outside of the treaty framework and none of the nuclear weapon states wants to deal with them, they have a very hard time getting uranium for their power reactors.
Mm-hmm.
So this deal that the United States has made with India will allow India, even though it's outside of the Non-Proliferation Treaty framework, to get nuclear fuel if it goes through the U.S. Congress, as well as other commercial nuclear technology. At the same time, the deal allows India to keep its nuclear weapons facilities and to build new nuclear weapons facilities simply by designating them as military facilities and keeping them out of the inspections arena. There, many facilities will be subjected to inspections.
And
so that's sort of the summary
on,
of the deal.
To put a number on that, there are some 22 reactors, fast breeder reactors and others in India today, and 14 of those will be placed under this agreement, and 14 from 22. Eight of them will be maintained as military facilities, which means that they're not subject to any kind of external inspection or control. Is that right?
That's correct. Some of these, like the two Russian reactors that are being built, actually, were already scheduled to be under inspections. The inspection agreement will have to be worked out. There's still a lot of work to be done, so people talk about this as if it's a done deal. It has to pass the U.S. Congress because laws will have to be amended that they currently prohibit exports of nuclear fuel to India from the United States. And India also has to make an agreement with the International Atomic Energy Agency regarding how the inspections will be carried out and what the framework of cooperation between India and the IAEA will be. So this is a deal, but it's not yet a done deal.
And this is a deal that the Iranians would be looking at and saying, why can't we have one just like it? Because here the United States is at least tacitly acknowledging that India is a nuclear weapons power, reputed to have about 50 bombs in their stockpile to date.
Maybe more.
And Iran, which has aspirations to join the nuclear club, is trying a similar track. They're saying, oh, we just want some safe civilian nuclear power generating facilities. And, of course, the world suspects, and rightly so, that they have a program to develop fissionable materials and ultimately build their own arsenal of nuclear weapons. So how does the United States handle the obvious disparity here between our treatment of India and our treatment of Iran and North Korea?
Well, the United States is abandoning any pretense that there aren't double standards. The United States in the last few years has unfortunately been tearing up security-related treaties.
Yes.
Some colleagues of mine and I actually did a book called Rule of Power or Rule of Law, outlining this unfortunate tendency. It goes back before this Bush administration, into the 1990s. When the Senate defeated the Test Ban Treaty, did not ratify it. And then the Bush administration has taken it farther, saying the commitments that were made on getting rid of nuclear weapons, we're going to withdraw from them. They're not good anymore. We're going to set our own policy. And now what is happening, leave Iran alone, where they've done some violations of their commitments and there's talk of sanctions. Think about Egypt. Suppose Egypt said, I want nuclear reactors. They are a party in good standing, member of the Non-Proliferation Treaty. It guarantees them civilian nuclear technology and obliges nuclear weapon states to help them get it. And they're going to say, well, India is outside the framework. You're saying they're good boys, they haven't proliferated. But we've been good boys, we haven't proliferated. We've got Israel next door, they've got nuclear weapons. How about giving us nuclear power technology? The Venezuelans want it. The Brazilians have an enrichment plant. The Argentinians are going to talk about it. What about the Pakistanis? They've already asked for it. The Chinese are building a power reactor in Pakistan currently. Now, even though nuclear power is, in my opinion, really not the right answer for either India and much less for Pakistan on energy problem solutions, it's become such a prestige thing because the United States has now elevated this by the president constantly talking about it at home and then having this extremely high-profile deal with India. That now everybody and his brother is going to want one of these, and it's going to be interesting to see how the U.S. deals with it. It's going to be very tough.
Well, and his first stop, of course, is Pakistan.
Yes.
And I'm sure that President Musharraf is saying, can I have a deal like India?
Well, I don't know that he's even going to bother to ask, because Undersecretary Burns has already said that Pakistan cannot get this deal. Rightly, I mean, there is a difference. I think the U.S. is right in that India has not proliferated its weapons capability, but Pakistan has done that, not as a government perhaps, but it's through its chief engineer there.
A.Q. Khan.
So there is that difference. But now Pakistan has a choice, and the Chinese can say, well, you know, we've cooperated with Pakistan in the past, and Pakistan is not much different in status than India, and we can help them acquire this technology. The main problems, I think, are going to come in relation to other states. I mean, in 1995, the United States, nuclear weapon states, more than 180 countries agreed to work for a nuclear weapon-free zone in the Middle East, including Israel, obviously, which is the only country to have them currently.
Right. Mm-hmm.
There's been no progress. And, of course, there's unlikely to be progress. And so now this opening up this can of worms in regard to essentially bringing India into the nuclear club in a very, very high-profile way, although the U.S. denies that it's done that. It's obviously done that. India is not only allowed to have its existing weapons capability, but to build new capability.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think we should get rid of these things, and the U.S. should get rid of them, and India should get rid of them. And how we get there is complex. But this double standard situation has just become much worse.
Indeed.
And I think we're gradually losing the one instrument that could help us prevent the spread of weapons and also get rid of them.
We'll pick up there as we continue, and the double standard is what I want to return to. We're talking with Dr. Arjun Makhijani. He's president of the Institute for Energy and Environmental Research, Tacoma Park, Maryland. And if you have a question or comment about the deal that Bush made with India about nuclear power, nuclear weapons, I'd like to hear from you. Lines are open right now on the Central Coast, 831-899-5792. That's 899-KRXA. Or call me toll-free at 1-888-579-2540. 888-579-2540. It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
If you own a Volvo and you want quality repairs and great service at a fair price, then take your Volvo to Hunt's Auto Repair in Seaside. They only work on Volvos, and they can do any needed service and repair, including all factory-recommended maintenance. Owner Mike Brooks is a Volvo-certified and factory-trained technician with over 16 years' experience. Mike's partner Tracy is also a factory-trained Volvo service advisor. Many Volvo owners in the area already know and trust Tracy to take care of their Volvos.
Hans Auto Repair, 384 Olympia Avenue, Seaside, is a locally owned and family-operated full-service Volvo repair shop, where Mike and I feature honest, quality service at a fair price.
Bring your Volvo to us, and we'll do everything possible to ensure that you leave satisfied and fully informed about your Volvo. Remember, that's Hans Auto Repair, 384 Olympia Avenue, Seaside. For more info, give us a call at 583-9820.
That's 583-9820.
Hi, I'm Dan Brown, president of At Your Service Premier Event Planning and Transportation. We specialize in events ranging from a two-person anniversary or 200 guests attending the great AT&T or the concourse. We have a fleet of sedans, limousines, vans, mini coaches, as well as vintage cars that make any event special. Weddings, wine tours, or corporate events, give us a call, 625-5363, or check us out on the web, MontereyLimos.com.
Is what you're doing in the market working for you? Are you happy with the results? Are you making money? Sundays at 2 p.m., KRXA is proud to present a new show entitled Safe Money and Retirement Talk, hosted by R.J. Moyer of About College Funding and the Protect My Assets Radio Network. RJ will present the latest information necessary to help you protect your money and ensure a comfortable retirement. Join RJ Moyer every Sunday from 2 to 3 p.m. for Safe Money and Retirement Talk, right here on KRXA 540.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside. KRXA 540 with your first Friday afternoon traffic report. Here's the superstar from Metro Traffic, Amy Knight.
Peter, we are so busy this afternoon. We'll start off in Carmel, Highway 1 at Carpenter Street, a two-car collision partially blocking the roadway there. Also in Gilroy, Highway 152 at San Felipe Road, an injury accident with two cars. One of the vehicles has struck a telephone pole. An ambulance is on the way, and eastbound 152 has traffic stopped at Lover's Lane. In Santa Cruz, Pine Flat Road at Ice Cream Grade, an accident on the shoulder. And in Felton, Mount Hermon Road at Graham Hill Road, an accident off to the right-hand side. The Napa Hat Swap has begun. Just bring in an old hat into your local Napa Auto Parts store, and they'll swap it for a brand new Napa racing hat. Napa, get the good stuff. Amy Knight with traffic on KRXA 540.
Thanks, Amy. We'll check back in about a half hour.
Okay.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, and in the Nuclear Club, it used to be a small, small world. Ah, but it's getting bigger. We continue our conversation with Dr. Arjun Makajan, and he, as we mentioned, is, I'm sorry, Makajani, I lost the
right.
I there,
yeah,
president of the Institute for Energy and Environmental Research in Tacoma Park, Maryland, and an expert on nuclear issues, got his Ph.D. in engineering from UC Berkeley. And, Doctor, what is the rough count of the membership in the nuclear club on planet Earth right now?
Well, it's either 8 or 9. There is the United States, Russia, Britain, France, and China. They are the 5 nuclear weapon states that are part of the Non-Proliferation Treaty as weapon states and promised to get rid of their weapons a long time ago. They made that promise. Then there was Israel, which is not a party to the NPT, then India and Pakistan. So there are 8 who have arsenals. Israel hasn't admitted, but has a few hundred bombs, a couple hundred bombs. The North Koreans have left the Non-Proliferation Treaty and have quite a lot of plutonium to make maybe several bombs, have said they have bombs, but that's not verified in any way in terms of there's still some uncertainty as to whether they have bombs, but prudent to assume that they have a few.
Yeah. Now, we referenced, you did, the double standard in our first segment, and I think it's critical for people to understand, number one, that the double standard did not originate with the Bush administration, but it's taken on a much sharper focus with the repudiation of several treaties. And the do-as-we-say, not-as-we-do message that we have tried to impose on North Korea and Iran. Also, I think there is a message sent by omission that when it was identified that Abdul Qadir Khan, AQ Khan, as it's pronounced in Pakistan, was proliferating, was delivering both technology and materiel, often transshipped through Dubai, a very interesting sidebar these days. And we permitted him to retire, and the U.S. took no action against Pakistan, made no effort to bring him to justice, so to speak, as we threatened to many others around the world whom we don't like. And I think that these mixed messages are going to haunt us for a long period to come. Your comment?
Well, yes, I think it actually even goes back farther than that in the sense that the U.S. goes along with these treaties in a way that's convenient and makes promises and then tends to break them. This is the opposite side of the coin of the U.S. being a progenitor of the rule of law. I mean, the great side of U.S. political culture, which gave the world the idea and the reality of the rule of a constitution, rule of laws, not of men, and so on, that has inspired, you know, all kinds of people through the centuries and still does. But there's this unfortunate tendency as a great power, and perhaps like other great powers, to kind of break the rules and say, do as I say, not as I do. And actually, the Indian nuclear weapons history is a case in point in that the U.S. had an alliance with Pakistan because mostly Pakistan was a backdoor mat for Nixon's visit to China. And at that time, India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh were having a war, mostly because Bangladesh was wanting to be free of Pakistani military rule and quite a lot of brutality. And the United States sent a nuclear-armed aircraft carrier into the Bay of Bengal and made a pretty open nuclear threat, at least that's how it was understood in India. Mm-hmm. And that was the trigger for the Indian decision for the 1974 test. And while it's not remembered in the United States that way, it certainly is remembered in India. And of course, India's test triggered the Pakistani test. And I don't think that the Indian development of the arsenal, by the way, was a very good idea. Mm-hmm. This is just to recount what the facts are and how difficult the facts are. So North Korea had 700 nuclear weapons aimed at it by the United States across the demilitarized zone. And when it lost the protection of the Russians, as the Soviet Union was falling apart, it decided to make its own. Mm-hmm. Iran has been in the gun sights for a while. So you don't have to agree with or be an admirer or support the regimes to see the rationale that they think, well, if you're in the nuclear gun sights of a great power, the only way to protect yourself is maybe to get some. And this is a very, very dangerous and unfortunate dynamic because the U.S. should be adhering to what is called a no-first-use policy. That is, if you don't have nuclear weapons, I'm not going to aim nuclear weapons at you.
Doctor,
and
if you can pause,
to do that, but hasn't done.
I want to sneak in a caller before we run out of time. Cheryl in Arcata, thanks for joining us, and say hello to Dr. Makajani.
Hi, good afternoon, and happy Friday.
Yes.
I have a couple comments first and then a question. First, I think that having more nuclear plants developed is potentially a cataclysmic event against humanity waiting to happen.
Well, but they're now selling them to us as a solution to greenhouse emissions and global warming. Be careful. Go ahead, Cheryl.
No, I understand that, but there's other alternatives, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And from the perspective of, if we are going to go through with supplying the fuel to the Indian government,
mm-hmm.
we held these cards, and we did not say with any kind of restrictions of testing any weapons or using any of their power, that this is a restriction, by all means, that you need to do this and comply. But I guess my big concern is that we have India on a pretty seismic active area,
mm-hmm.
and with nuclear reactors potentially being nuclear bombs, I wonder what kind of perspective.
Okay, I've got your question, and I only have 20 seconds. Doctor, a quick answer?
Yeah, I don't think weapons have a seismic-related concern. Part of India is in a seismic zone, the northern part, and there are earthquakes elsewhere also. I mean, this is part of siting a nuclear power plant and part of the risks of power plants. I agree.
Doctor, we're out of time, but thank you for joining us, Dr. Arjun Makajani, on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Every Sunday morning at 10, listen to Rock Roller Real Estate. The number one Sunday morning Bay Area real estate show is now on KRXA 540. If you want to learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling high-end homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are, this is the show for you. Rock Roller Real Estate, the Bay Area's number one Sunday morning real estate show, now covering the Central Coast. For more information on how to become a guest, call 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate.
You already know that Joe Rombi's La Mia Cucina in Pacific Grove serves the best Italian meals this side of Roma in an elegant, comfortable setting. What you may not know is that you can also enjoy Joe Rombie's incomparable cuisine in the comfort of your family room, dining room, or kitchen. Your only stop for such delicacies as portobello mushroom ravioli, spaghetti bolognese, crab cakes, and sand dabs is Joe Rombie's La Piccola Casa in PG on 17th, just above Lighthouse. Drop by on your way home from work or any time, and if you're looking for the ideal private room for your next party, look no further than Joe Rombie's La Piccola Casa and La Mia Cucina. Joe Rombie has three rooms that can accommodate groups of any size from 16 to 60. For unforgettable meals in a private setting at your place or theirs, call 373-8116 or drop by La Piccola Casa, 17th Street between Lighthouse and Laurel in Pacific Grove.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
We all have dreams, and dreams inspire possibilities in our lives. For many of us, one of our principal dreams is to live in harmony with our natural environment, to convert that sacred space we call home into a physical representation of our true nature.
Hi, I'm Peter Eichhorn, owner of Eichhorn Incorporated, a company dedicated to designing and creating of ecologically sound masonry projects to fulfill your particular desires and needs. Let me work with you to make your dreams real and your dwelling an enchanting, personalized home, one with nature, a true reflection of your inner desires. Make this new year special and let me assist you in your quest. I have a lifetime of experience, I'm honest, my prices are affordable, and I love what I do. Call me at 393-1300. That's 393-1300.
Hi, this is Stephanie Miller. You know how much I love the Monterey Peninsula. You've got it all. Mountains, the sea, some of the best box wine I've ever had. You also have a great radio station, KRXA, your progressive prescription. So join me, voice guy extraordinaire Jim Ward, and producer Chris Lavoie as we take back America every weekday morning, 6 to 9 a.m. right here on AM 540.
It is useless to resist us.
I'll bet you can try. 4:33, it's a Friday afternoon at the radio. Still to come on the Peter B. Collins Show today, John Laird, the assemblyman from Santa Cruz, who's on the team negotiating with the governor over the new bond package. Will Arnold stay in California this weekend, or will he go pump it up at the Arnold Classic and put the bond measure off? Well, we'll find out from John Laird coming up next hour. Also, our weekly visit with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Lots to talk about with the Bradness. That's coming up next hour. Joining me now is Shahid Mahmood. He's an editorial cartoonist based in one of my favorite North American cities, Montreal. He focuses on international politics and world events. He's been drawing since 1986, and he's also a Muslim. Thanks for joining us today, Shahid.
Thanks, Peter. Actually, I'm in Toronto these days.
Really? Well, my bio says you're in Montreal.
Yeah, you must have a slightly dated one, but
I stole it off your website.
Yeah. Well, it's really my fault. It's something I haven't really updated. I mean, I think Clinton is still up there.
Well, I have a couple of stale websites too, so
yeah.
I feel your pain.
Yeah.
Well, Toronto isn't bad.
Toronto's nice. I agree with you. Montreal is far nicer.
Yeah, I've spent a few times there. Always enjoyed the food.
Mm-hmm.
I speak passable French, so it's.
You go to the jazz festival?
No. I was there for the World's Fair in 1967, though.
Oh. They have an awesome jazz festival every year.
When is it?
I believe it's July, August.
Okay.
And they sort of shut down the city core, and it's just for pedestrians. You walk around. They have all sorts of booths set up for jazz performances.
Mm-hmm.
It's great.
All right. Now, tell us about, I won't poison your mind with any setup.
Mm-hmm.
What, in your view, is the current status of the worldwide reaction to the cartoons that were published in Denmark that mm-hmm. offended so many Muslims?
Well, Peter, the way I have seen this whole sort of, and I call it a fiasco, because it's sort of a fiasco on all sides. The cartoons in question, for me, as an editorial cartoonist, are really awful examples, which I consider a, if I may be so forward, a sophisticated form of editorial humor. These cartoons, which were first published in Denmark, I found them quite vacuous and ignorant. Although I am a Muslim, I sort of border on the secular end. I still find that, you know, to directly link one of the founders of one of the world's leading monotheistic religions with terrorist violence, which seemed to be the clear implication of these cartoons, is quite erroneous. So it became an issue of depicting something which is not true, which to me is far more a serious sort of passion than sort of the freedom of the press. I mean, freedom of the press should really work under the auspices of being something that relates something true.
Well, but to be fair, this is not the first time a cartoon would fit that characterization. Would you agree, Shaheen? I mean, there are a lot of cartoons out there that are not based on fact, that misrepresent the issues being described or drawn about,
mm-hmm.
and that represent an extreme point of view from the pen of the guy drawing the cartoon.
I totally agree with you, and I think what the issue here is that it really, the Danish cartoon, I see it as a faulty valve on straining on this lid of a simmering pressure cooker. I think, you know, sort of Muslims as a whole have been dealing with issues which can be considered not ideal in the best of terms, in the sense that, you know, they've had to deal with their faith being questioned. In North America, for instance, Muslims are on no-fly list, you know, myself included. I can't go to the U.S. You know, there's Guantanamo Bay. People, you get images of, you know, the Quran being flushed down the toilet.
Mm-hmm.
Muslims as a whole make up a fair population of the immigrant sort of influx coming into Europe. However, in Europe, the difference in Europe is that you don't have sort of the social infrastructures. It's not really a melting pot. Neither is it sort of what Canada practices, which is sort of a multiculturalism.
Mm-hmm.
You're being thrown into a unicultural atmosphere, and you know, they sort of feel targeted. Whatever the question, I mean, I'm not saying that the reaction that has that you see on TV is right, because I think what has happened is that the Islamic extremism has really hijacked the religion. There's a general apathy and fear shown by the Muslim masses, and I would call these the moderates in the face of this radicalism. You know, personally, I've been threatened and my work has been censored by this sort of in the face of this Islamic extremism. You know,
mm-hmm.
Fearful Arab and Pakistani editors don't want to print some of my stuff. And, you know, many people have faced this. These editors hide behind euphemisms, and they don't risk critical thought.
But how do we reconcile all this, Shaheed? Because on the one hand, I hear what you're saying,
mm-hmm.
and I agree
that are across the world, many Muslims have very well-justified complaints and issues with the way they are being treated, the way they're being perceived, and the kind of racism that has been applied more since 9/11, but it certainly didn't begin there. And at the same time, you know, if people want to take to the streets and torch embassies over images, the images from Abu Ghraib prison are much more deeply offensive on a human level, a cultural level, and a religious level than these stupid cartoons about the Prophet.
I totally agree with you, Peter. I mean, when I saw these cartoons in September or October, whenever they first came out, I saw them and I flipped the page. It didn't really strike me as anything. And I guess that's where I was wrong, in the sense that they were actually a gauge of the Muslim sentiment at this time. Now, whether that's a true sentiment of the Muslim masses who are out there who might react to it on a level that we're sort of talking about in terms of burning embassies and refugees, I think what's happening is that there is Islamic radicalism has been pushed to an extent that they are now feeling the pressure. And these radicals now are really, what they do is, I mean, they have access to masses who are illiterate, uneducated. They don't have a social support system for them. Mm-hmm. They don't have Medicare. They don't have basic items that we take for granted here in North America. So what they do is, and I've seen this, I mean, having grown up in Pakistan, I've seen how, you know, Muslim imams or religious leaders, for their own political sort of strategizing support, they will, you know, pay some people, they'll give them food, and the people will take to the streets.
Mm-hmm.
There's a certain social frustration with the masses.
And Shahid, as we've seen the kind of post-riot analysis, at every step, the situation was hyped. Gasoline was thrown on the fire. The imam from Copenhagen, who compiled the original 12 drawings and then added a bunch of others, some of which more offensive than what was published in the newspapers there, then took them to Egypt, then during the Hajj took them to Mecca. And at each stage, more gasoline was added to this fire. And I don't dispute that the Denmark government handled it very badly and did not offer, you know, a sufficient response to the initial complaints. But it spiraled way out of control from there and has been used as an incendiary device in a very, if I'll complete the metaphor, in a tinderbox portion of the world.
I totally agree. And there is this, I mean, you look at Pakistan as a case example here. You have Musharraf, who is hunting down a lot of these extremists and radicals who have been imprisoned as of late. You know, this sort of move that Musharraf has made on this form of extremism has coincided with the cartoon fiasco. And these extremists are using the cartoon to garner support. It's the classic sort of, if you throw the problems out somewhere else, you don't see the problems at home. And that's what's happening. I mean, they've hijacked the religion. And, you know, actually just a couple of days ago, you know, a group of 12 writers put their names to a statement in a French weekly newspaper warning of Islamic totalitarianism. You know, Salman Rushdie signed it, and Bernard Henri Levy, who, I mean, I don't particularly care for him, but he's on that name, on that list anyway.
Understood.
But, you know, here we have it. People are now starting to realize that the problem is with this few group of people who are actually controlling the image of Islam. And it's a problem. I mean, the moderates are not taking onus to stand up to these people, and they're scared. I mean, and having said that, I think Muslims as a whole just need to be more at ease and more informed about their own faith.
So we need to take a break, and we'll continue with you in just a moment. I want to open up the phone lines if you'd like to talk with Shahid Mahmood. He's with us till the top of the hour, and you've heard his comments about the Islamic cartoon reaction. Let's talk about it. 831-899-5792 for you on the Central Coast. That's a local call. 899-KRXA or toll-free from Eureka or elsewhere. 1-888-579-2540. That's 888-579-2540. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Do you care about labor issues?
Does it matter to you that we're losing thousands of jobs a year in this country to NAFTA and CAFTA?
Should all working men and women have health coverage?
Do you care about local labor struggles where workers are being exploited?
Do you want to unionize?
If you care, then join us. I'm Jose Mendez.
And I'm Ren Bradley.
Every Sunday starting March 5th from 1 to 2 p.m. for our new show,
Labor Matters,
as we discuss these important issues.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
There are radio talk shows about sports, politics, money, sex, and religion. Now there's a talk show for parents and everyone else who cares for new grandmother, a nurse, and parent educator. Listen and call in Childhood Matters every Sunday from 9 to 10 here on KRXA 540.
KRXA 540 checks your traffic. It's busy this Friday afternoon. Here's Amy Knight.
It sure is, and we saw an accident clearing Highway 152 at San Felipe Road. It's a two-car collision, and one of the vehicles struck a telephone pole. Traffic is still very heavy in both directions, so expect delays. Also, Pine Flat Road at Ice Cream Grade in San...
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. We continue our conversation with cartoonist, political cartoonist, Shahid Mahmood. And you can see his work at the website drawnconclusions.com. That's drawnconclusions.com. And if you can't spell it, tough. And Shahid, is it correct when there's an H like there is in your name, M-A-H-M-O-O-D, do we clear our throats as we say that, Mahmood?
I think that's an Arab thing. But with the subcontinent, sort of how you spell it, Mahmood.
Mahmood.
Yeah, it's less German.
Okay. I have a lot to learn about accents and pronunciations.
No, that's fine.
So, Shahid, where are we now? Are we in a kind of a state of imposed political correctness where the next person who does anything intentionally or unintentionally that is seen as derogatory toward the Prophet Muhammad will, set off a reaction even greater than what we saw after these cartoons?
Well, I hope not. I mean, I think what the cartoon, these 12 original cartoons, and you know, some of them worked on some superficial way for me, but most of them, when I look at a cartoon, actually Lewis Lapham put it really nicely once. He wrote a preface for a collection of caricatures for a fellow cartoonist, Steve Brodner.
And he's editor of The Nation, by the way. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Harper's. Harper's. Yeah.
He wrote, satire is humor sent on a moral errand. Any ventures on the darker shores of satire pre-proposes readers well enough aware of their own hypocrisies to see the stone of truth hidden behind the back of a not-so-genial smile. And ironically, the cartoons, I mean, A, they didn't have any element of satire to them, but ironically what they did do is they exposed the hypocrisies of both sort of the Danish component and the sort of the Muslim component. And I think in that way it succeeded. But getting to your question, I think you need satire, because what satire does is it blends a critical attitude with humor, as well as the end intention of trying to improve human institutions or even humanity. And I think, you know, to be satirical, even of faith, it's necessary, because it sort of elevates people to think differently. It makes them, or rather evolves humanity. And I think it's necessary. And I think if this doesn't happen, it's a sad state of affairs.
Last night I went to an art gallery in San Francisco, and I saw an interesting depiction of the Christ figure on the cross, and this was not Photoshop, but people understand Photoshop. The face of Jesus had been replaced by Osama bin Laden. And in the left-hand frame of this graphic piece, it was more than a painting, was a picture that depicted George W. Bush in an unflattering way. I don't remember exactly what it was. My point is that I was not deeply offended by this. I didn't buy it and take it home to put on my wall. But I consider it free expression on the part of this artist. To use a common depiction of Jesus on the cross. It's in every Catholic church. It's in every Catholic school. And it is an imaginary... what's the best way to describe it? You know, nobody knows exactly what Jesus Christ looked like. So it is a depiction that's based on kind of a composite sense of church art over 1,000 or more years. And so the image of Jesus is something that... in the Christian world is readily identifiable and well understood. And yet I don't consider it to be, it may be in poor taste, it may be deemed offensive by certain devout followers, but to me it is fully legitimate for that artist to put Osama's face on Jesus Christ. That's a point that artist wanted to make, and I can't explain exactly what he or she intended, but, you know, I consider that to be a legitimate form of free expression.
Well, I think what happens in an art gallery is also very different from what goes on to a publication, for instance. You know, one is, and there is a difference in my eyes between art and editorial art. I mean, with the editorial art, you are trying to make some sort of representation of the truth, or trying to make people think differently, using truth as your basic parameters. You know, art, you can really delve into all sorts of different, perhaps you can even call them inconsistencies. And, you know, I'm not being subjective here. I'm just saying that this is what one is and what the other is. You know, if you come back to the cartoons, I think 2 years ago in April 2003, a Danish cartoonist called Christopher Zeiler, I believe, offered some cartoons of Jesus to the same newspaper, and they were refused. Why? Because, you know, the audience that the newspaper was catering to would have been offended. So with publication art, you do get, I mean, who is your target audience? I mean, the newspaper exists because of certain buyership into it, whereas a gallery, you know, you have a bit more liberty. So there is a difference, I think.
Okay. What do we do about South Park? Do we have to go up and jam the satellites to make sure that a show like South Park, which is intended to offend absolutely everyone, is never viewed in the Islamic world?
Well, see, I think, you know, Peter, I think it really comes down to, I think the Muslims just have to feel more comfortable in their own skin. They have to learn how to take criticism and not sort of take it personally in the sense of going and burning down embassies. They have to realize that, you know, they should not be answerable to Islamic extremism. They need to sort of take their own stance. They need to, you know, do things how, according to, you know, what is mandated in the countries that they live in, whether it's writing letters to the editor, going to their minister of parliament and complaining. I mean, there are many ways of doing things that do not mean reverting to violence. You know, you can, there are channels to voice your opinion, albeit, you know, some of them are very hard to access. I mean, you know, I've been called a Holocaust denier because of, you know, being critical of Israeli foreign policy. I've been sent death threat letters from Muslim extremists for how I depict their sort of archaic attitudes towards religion. You know, I've been denied flying into the U.S. because of my sort of criticism of the Bush administration.
Mm-hmm.
So there, people will always be offended. And, you know, I think people in power have more sophisticated ways of restricting the things you can and cannot say.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the bottom line is that, you know, if you depict the truth and you sort of are critical of that, then I really don't think people should take offense. I mean,
But we have a long history in the West of what's called agitprop, propaganda that is attempting to agitate people to get them to react on a specific issue or a point of view. Do we now have to rein in the expression of people in the agitprop zone?
Well, I think it comes down to just being consistent, right?
Isn't there a chilling effect on artists just like yourselves that you have to now look at the potential consequences, irrational they might be, but you still have to look at the potential consequences before you freely express yourself?
Well, for instance, I think it comes back to the same thing I've been saying, in the sense that what is the cartoonist being critical of? Like, let's just go back to the 12 cartoonists.
Mm-hmm.
They were asked to depict Islam. I mean, how do you go about depicting Islam by showing the Prophet Muhammad as a terrorist?
Mm-hmm.
What is the logical link between the two?
It's a racist link.
Exactly. So, if the cartoonist wanted to be critical of Islam, I think there's 1,001 ways to be critical of Islam. I've been critical of Islam without necessarily going into the realm of being either racist or being hypocritical about it.
Shahid, I'm sorry we're out of time, but I enjoyed talking with you about this. And next time I'm in Toronto or Montreal, I'm going to look you up.
Do call me.
Shahid Mahmood. And his website is drawnconclusions.com. I'm Peter B. Collins. You already know that Joe Rombi's La Mia Cucina in Pacific Grove serves the best Italian meals this side of Roma in an elegant, comfortable setting. What you may not know is that you can also enjoy Joe Rombi's incomparable cuisine in the comfort of your family room, dining room, or kitchen. Your only stop for such delicacies as portobello mushroom ravioli, spaghetti bolognese, crab cakes, and sand dabs is Joe Rombi's La Piccola Casa in PG on 17th, just above Lighthouse. Drop by on your way home from work or any time. And if you're looking for the ideal private room for your next party, look no further than Joe Rombi's La Piccola Casa and La Mia Cucina. Joe Rombi has 3 rooms that can accommodate groups of any size from 16 to 60. For unforgettable meals in a private setting at your place or theirs, call 373-8116 or drop by La Piccola Casa, 17th Street between Lighthouse and Laurel in Pacific Grove.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Lou Milliano. Unprecedented in the history of the United States Congress, the scandal that surrounded former California Congressman Randy Cunningham
who pleaded guilty to demanding bribes or roles, a yacht, millions of dollars from defense contractors to get fat defense contracts. So where does his sentence of 8 years and 4 months rank?
We're absolutely satisfied.
California prosecutor Jason Forge on the longest sentence ever given a serving or former congressman. Marta Davis is a reporter with KFMB.
As the judge read the prison term, the courtroom was silent. But before the sentence was announced, Duke Cunningham told the judge, quote, "Your Honor, I have ripped my life to shreds due to my actions that I did to myself."
Cunningham told the court he made a very wrong turn. A collective whew in a boardroom at Northwest Airlines as the carrier comes to a tentative accord with pilots. No raise, a pay cut. The pilots had been the last union still at the table with the bankrupt airline without an agreement. Your BlackBerry was developed by an outfit called Research in Motion, RIM, but the technology behind it was patented by NTP, which today agreed to the not-so-tidy little sum of $612.5 million from RIM to drop its lawsuit and no longer seek an injunction, which basically would have shut your BlackBerry down. Larry Maggot, CBS News technology consultant.
They have deals with just about all the cellular carriers in the United States and many overseas. So there's millions and millions of dollars riding on this from a lot of companies. So it's very fortunate that they've settled, and I suspect there was a great deal of pressure on them from their partners to do so.
As for tomorrow, Lamont Wood writes for Computer World.
No one else quite at the moment has what the BlackBerry offers, but people are lining up to attempt to do so. Things like the Trio and other wireless devices. This field will only get more competitive, and the devices will only get more powerful.
A little more here, a little more there. The U.S. budget deficit is now expected to reach $371 billion. That's $16 billion more than an earlier estimate of $355 billion. The Congressional Budget Office says the likely increase was attributed mainly to additional funds requested by the Bush administration for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. If you listen closely, these demonstrators are chanting, "Go Bush, go!" The scene is Pakistan.
I'm Mark Noller in Islamabad. A day after a U.S. diplomat in Pakistan was killed by a suicide bomber, President Bush arrived under cover of darkness. The running lights of Air Force One were turned off, and the shades on the windows were drawn to keep would-be attackers on the ground from seeing the 747. It landed safely, and Mr. Bush and the First Lady headed to the U.S. ambassador's residence, though it was not clear if they went by helicopter or motorcade.
President Bush is in Pakistan to show solidarity with Islamabad in the war on terror. On Wall Street, the Dow slipped 4. This is CBS News.
Where do you want to be?
Everybody has a different idea of the perfect home. I'd love a little house in the country.
I want someplace close to my office. It's essential that I live within the delivery zone of my favorite pizza parlor.
Find your perfect place. It's easy with RE/MAX. RE/MAX agents have the experience to make your dreams a reality. Visit RE/MAX.com today. Nobody sells more real estate than RE/MAX. Each office independently owned and operated.
Ever wonder who coined the phrase, "We eliminate the middleman"? Well, one thing's pretty certain. It wasn't the middleman. And how did they eliminate him? Something fishy there. But I digress. GEICO pioneered direct-to-consumer car insurance over 65 years ago, and they've been saving smart drivers money ever since. Give them a call, and you might ask them, what did they do with the middleman?
GEICO's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? GEICO, 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
It's been 6 months since Katrina hit the Gulf Coast. Today, a congressional visit the locals hope will drive home what half a year of TV, radio, and newspaper stories apparently failed to do. Drive home the point a lot of the area still looks like a war zone. WWL reporter Dave Cohen has the story.
Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi says once everyone sees the devastation here firsthand, it'll be unavoidable that Congress will have to take action.
And to help in a more significant, community-focused way.
House Speaker Dennis Hastert says he's here to make sure everything is being done to avoid another disaster like Katrina.
So what do we have to do now? What are the precautions that we have to do to make sure that that doesn't happen again?
The group has been touring the hardest-hit areas in Louisiana, Alabama, and Mississippi. Dave Cohen for CBS News, New Orleans.
Navy jet crashed today, northeastern Oregon. Emergency workers say 4 crew members parachuted to safety. I'm Lou Mulligano, CBS News.
This is Charles Osgood of the Osgood File. Many have pondered the reason for Mona Lisa's enigmatic smile. I think the answer is, as Leonardo's model, she was just one of those lucky people who liked her job. like the accountants at Grant Thornton. Their passion for what they do, their expertise and partner involvement, have made them one of the largest accounting organizations in the world, with member firms in over 100 countries. Maybe that's why their clients are so passionate about them. Grant Thornton, a passion for the business of accounting. This is Charles Osgood. I'll see you on the radio on the Osgood File.
Last year at the PBR World Finals, world champion Justin McBride tamed the beast.
Folks, Justin McBride has done it.
Now the beast is back, and revenge will be anything but sweet. Strap yourself in for an all-new season of the PBR Built for Tough Series. The toughest cowboys take on the baddest bulls.
Bugswinger, this might be his best year ever.
An all-new season of the PBR. Saturday at 9 Eastern and Sunday at 10 Eastern. Only on OLN.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, and I'm glad you're listening. 5:06 on this Friday evening. Coming up just a few minutes from now, Brad Friedman returns for his weekly visit, the proprietor of bradblog.com. We got loads of stuff to talk with Brad about. And we're expecting a call any second now from Assemblymember John Lair, Democrat from Santa Cruz. And he has been front and center on the committee negotiating with the governor and his crew over the proposed infrastructure bonds to help rebuild California. And last week, at just about the time that John Laird and I were talking here on the radio, the governor pulled a fast one. You know how it is. If they want to put something out and they don't really want you to know about it, they do it on Friday between 5 and 5:30. Because the TV news shows aren't interested in real news on a Friday night. And the Saturday papers are the, you know, lowest circulation, least read of the week. And last week at about this time, the governor's office announced that he was declaring a state of emergency related to our levies. And we'll ask John Laird what that means and why he did it in the manner that he did. Also, one of the big questions of the moment is, will Arnold stay in California this weekend? Now, the Democratic leaders have pointed out to the governor that his ambitious agenda for this bond spending, if it's going to be submitted to voters in the June primary election, must be finalized by the legislature by a week from today, March the 10th. But the governor, Terminator, Muscle Man, is scheduled to be in Columbus, Ohio this weekend for the Arnold Classic, from which he no longer gets any money, we think. And John Laird is on with us now, the assemblyman from Santa Cruz. John, do we have any information on whether the governor will stay in California this weekend to attend to business, or will he be in Columbus, Ohio, flexing his muscles with the other strongmen?
I haven't been able to hear in the last few hours. When I left the Capitol last night, he had offered to not go, and the negotiations were moving ahead. I just haven't heard whether he made the ultimate decision to pull the plug.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting.
I advised the speaker that if he went, he ought to fly to the Classic and offer publicly to negotiate there, given the deadline.
Well, and also, you know, the governor's got his own Gulf Stream, and you could do some actual work in the, what, 3 or 4 hours in each direction it takes to fly from Sacramento or L.A. to Columbus, Ohio.
Yes, that's possible, and I think that part of the problem with the whole thing is that the governor didn't, in my view, seriously engage in negotiations until yesterday, and he had been gone. He'd been at the Republican convention in San Jose. He had been at the National Governors Conference in Washington. He'd been back for a day or two, and now if he's keeping his date, he's jetting off to Ohio. And when you're trying to negotiate a multi-billion dollar bond package to go on the ballot by next Friday, that's something that's hard under any circumstance, but it really needs daily contact of people around the table.
And how should we read this? Is it that the governor doesn't really want to negotiate? It's just a take it or leave it. I made my proposal in the State of the State message, and please just give me what I outlined. Or is he playing a different kind of game where he doesn't actually want this to qualify for the June ballot, and then as he's running for re-election in November, he can point the finger at that legislature, the do-nothing Democrats, and say, look, you know, I gave them a plan, and they couldn't even get it on the primary ballot.
Well, I think the latter is his fallback strategy if nothing happens, but I have reluctantly concluded that he just doesn't come from a background where negotiations and slogging through an issue on a day-to-day basis is his experience. And it was true with the negotiations to try to keep the special election from happening. It's true with this. It's, if it were me, based on almost 25 years in public office at the local and the state level, I would be meeting every day with at least the staffs, comparing things, doing research, getting back to the others, fact-finding, coming to agreement on some major things, like in this case is housing something that you could take in it because he didn't propose it and the legislature wants housing in. In his transportation bond, he didn't propose very much at all for public transit, and there's many of us that want to a higher percentage of public transit as well as roads in the ballot measure. He didn't propose resources. We would like resources. He really wants levies, and he upped the amount of the levy bond 2 days ago by $4.5 billion. It's those kind of conversations you would be having on a daily basis and agreeing on the facts and agreeing on the parameters and outlines of the deal, and that has just simply not been happening.
Now, you're one of six Democratic legislators appointed by your leader to serve on this committee. Who are your counterparts, and do they have full authority from the governor?
It's two Dems from each House and one Republican. So there's Senators Murray and Chesbrough that are Democrats from the Senate, and Senator Hollingsworth, who's a Republican. There's myself and Judy Chu is the Democrats from the Assembly, and Rick Keene, who is the Republican Assembly member. We are the six on the committee. And the real players include the Speaker on the Assembly side and the President pro tem on the Senate side, as well as the Republican leaders in each House. And it really includes the people in the conference committee, those people in the leadership, and the governor. And right now, I do not believe that the Republicans on the conference committee and even the Republican leaders in each House are negotiating on behalf of the governor. I think they right now happen to be the governor's big problem, because he has the potential of coming to an agreement much easier with the Democrats in each House than he does with the Republicans. And yet six Republican votes in the Assembly and two in the Senate are required to get the two-thirds to put a bond on the ballot.
Right. And is Susan Kennedy, the new chief of staff, the Republican, the Democrat, is she active in these talks?
She's involved, and I think that that part of the issue is that her style under Gray Davis was to jam the legislature. And I think a little bit of that has been going on with the bonds, but I don't think there's an awareness. It's a completely different dynamic, because when it was a Democratic majority in the legislature and a Democratic governor, sometimes the Democrats had no place to go. When there was a jam, that was the way to negotiate in public. But if you do that on behalf of a Republican governor to a Democratic legislature, it's a big problem.
Mm-hmm. John Laird, last week we were talking at about this time, and after I got off the air, I scoured the web a little bit and got the news that the governor had announced an emergency measure related to legislation for repair and rebuilding of levees. Now, I know you care deeply about this issue. You've been out front on the risks that we face and the need to address these problems for some time now. But were you surprised by the move, and what will it do to advance the cause?
I was very surprised by the move because there's no change in situation. And when Governor Davis declared a similar emergency in the electricity crisis, the federal government didn't really recognize it. And I think the same thing is happening here. The thought is that it might give the power to override certain environmental regulations and the power to even do some eminent domain, and that might be more of what's at hand here. And I think we have to wait to see how he proposes using it. But if he proposes to spend money that he doesn't quite have, or to take land, or to override environmental regulations, he's going to take an issue on which we have the potential of a good agreement and to drive it apart in a way that worries me about the ability to reach that agreement.
Now, when these emergencies are declared, it puts a letter X behind the number designating the bill. And as I understand it, it also causes it to go into effect sooner. It would take effect as early as July 1 instead of waiting for next January. Is that right?
That would happen if he calls a special session to consider what goes with the emergency. And he hasn't quite done that yet. And we're wondering if that is part of this, because you're exactly right. And the X is for extraordinary session. That's the what puts it in the bill. And it would go into effect much quicker. But if I were him, I wouldn't call the session unless I had a sense of where I was going. And I think nobody is clear on where it's going right now.
Well, it's going to be an interesting weekend. Are you prepared to take the governor's call?
I am. I'm prepared to do whatever it takes.
All right. Well, it's going to be a fascinating week, and we'll check back with you next Friday and see how things went.
Great.
Thanks, John Lehrer, Democratic Assemblyman from Santa Cruz, chair of the Assembly Budget Committee, and as he mentioned, on the panel that is evaluating this request from the governor and trying to negotiate with him when he makes himself available. Coming up next, Brad Friedman, proprietor of bradblog.com, joins us right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's tax time again, and there's one progressive tax preparer in the Monterey Bay area who specializes in tax returns for W-2 and self-employed working people. Jim Moore Income Tax specializes in preparing tax returns that maximize your refund and, through electronic filing, get you that refund as soon as you need it, in 24 hours, 2 weeks, or 3 weeks. The choice is yours. The personnel of Jim Moore Income Tax have been helping the hardworking Spanish-speaking residents of the Central Coast with immigration and tax preparation services for more than 30 years. You can get your tax return professionally prepared and electronically filed by bilingual tax professionals at a very reasonable fee. Need your tax refund tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today. Jim Moore Income Tax at 30 Alexander Street in downtown Watsonville, just two blocks from the Central Plaza. Be sure to bring a copy of your 2004 federal and California returns, W-2 1099 info for 2005. Need your tax refund tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today. 30 Alexander Street, downtown Watsonville. Join R.J. Moyer for his new weekend show about college funding this Saturday at 10 a.m. on KRXA 540. R.J. Moyer brings to the microphone a unique perspective on the benefits of a college education, and he shares with you his knowledge on how to substantially reduce your out-of-pocket college expenses.
This is R.J. Moyer. Join me for About College Funding Saturday morning at 10 on KRXA 540. Sponsored in part by The Potting Shed in Aptos.
Every Sunday morning at 10, listen to Rock Roller Real Estate. The number one Sunday morning Bay Area real estate show is now on KRXA 540.
If you want to learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling high-end homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are, this is the show for you. Rock Roller Real Estate, the Bay Area's number one Sunday morning real estate show, now covering the Central Coast. For more information on how to become a guest, call 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school, when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am Attorney Sean Mills.
Your plans for Friday night might be sidetracked by bad traffic. Let's get the details on KRXA from Amy Knight.
Reports of a solo spin out now in the Santa Cruz Mountains, northbound 17, north of Laurel Road. The left lane blocked, and CHP is going to run a traffic break to remove that car from the left lane. Expect delays. Also, Pine Flat Road at Ice Cream Grave. We still have a vehicle being cleared from the shoulder. And Soquel Drive at Trout Gulch Road. An accident involving a pickup truck that struck a power pole. Truck coming to a rest at the top of the support wires from the pole. Highway Patrol is on scene and still very heavy on Highway 152 near San Felipe Road in Gilroy from an earlier accident. The Napa hat swap has begun, so bring in any old hat to the Napa Auto Parts store and they'll swap it for a brand new racing hat. Napa, get the good stuff. Amy Knight with traffic on KRXA 540.
You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. Every Friday we make time to visit with his Bradness, Brad Friedman from bradblog.com.
Smiling faces sometimes
pretend to be your friend. Can you dig it?
Smiling faces show no traces of the evil that lurks within.
That's Electric Motown from 1970. They were called The Undisputed Truth. And The Temptations did an epic version of that song, like 18 minutes long, I think, on Sky's the Limit or one of those LPs back there. Hey, Brad, how you doing today?
I'm doing well, Peter. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. And you're the guy who looks past the smiling faces and tries to find the undisputed truth. I want to tip my hat to you once again for your work on the Dick Cheney shooting incident story. You were the one who really broke it to my world and many others, and brought us details that took the New York Times a week or two to publish.
Yeah, well, thank you, brother. Being the media because someone's got to. You know, that's our slogan.
Well, you do what you can, and you can do a lot. So just wanted to acknowledge that.
Well, I appreciate that. And now, let me return the favor and acknowledge the swell article I read about you today in the, I believe it was the Monterey Weekly.
Monterey County Weekly, yeah.
Monterey County Weekly, some good ink for KRXA.
I was the cover boy and no cleavage is showing.
You were on the cover?
Yeah.
Wow, nicely done. Desperate. Congratulations.
Yeah, apparently they were turned down by several others and just had to go to Plan D.
Well, you got a great face for radio, Peter. What can I say?
Now, Brad, let's kick off here because you're packing soundbite. Set this up about Brad Nelson, the Pima County election official, and then we'll listen to him go postal or ballistic or whatever it is he does.
Yeah, pretty amazing. Some exclusive video that we featured over at bradblog.com, and hopefully you've got the sound clip ready to go. But if folks want to actually see the video, what it is a meeting at a precinct meeting, a Democratic precinct meeting in Pima County, Arizona, with Brad Nelson, the Pima County elections director out there, and an election integrity advocate, John Brakey, asks him a question about the new touchscreen, Diebold touchscreen machines that the governor there has just allowed into the state. And out of the blue, it terrified, really, everyone in the room, from what I understand. This election director, Brad Nelson, sort of went nuts on this guy and started coming at him, charging at the video. If you've seen the video, you know, when he's yelling and screaming, you'll hear it in a second, he's actually coming right up to the camera, so clearly he knows it's there, and he has his fit on videotape, and what do you know? We brung it to the world via Brad Blog.
All right, let's listen. Go ahead, Joe.
Yes.
On the equipment that's coming in, I understand there's going to be 9 early locations, and there's going to be direct recording electronics, D-bolts.
I don't know that.
Well, did you sign the contract for it last day or two?
Nope.
No? When's the contract going to be signed?
It's already signed by the Secretary of State.
Okay, so we're getting Diebold AccuVolt machines, DREs, right?
I don't know that. I didn't sign the contract.
Well, we know you know, and we know that we know because we've seen the contract from the purchase order.
And you know that, too. I signed it. You just said I signed it.
Because, well, the Secretary
of State said
that the county...
Was my name on the contract or not?
All I can say is the county...
Was my name on the contract or not? You said it was.
No, it wasn't. I did not say it was. I didn't say it was. I'm asking a simple question. How do you want an accuracy in boat test when you run these ballots for the DRE when there's nothing?
200.
There's a lot, because our vote needs to count. We want to verify it. And we're voting on faith-based voting systems. That's what it comes down to. Over here, when he came in, he said, well, I'm going to buy those machines, and when they come in, we'll just kick them around or whatever. $3 million.
There'll
be 12 million for the whole state.
Okay.
John.
All right. Can I ask your question? You answer the question, then we'll move on. Okay.
What's your question, John?
My question is, how are you going to do an accuracy vote test on a DRE when it doesn't have a ballot, but just a paper, magnetic paper?
I haven't had the equipment in my hand yet. It's like asking me whether Marilyn Farnsworth was a good kisser in my senior high school class. Until I kissed her, I didn't know, and she was. So I
in New Mexico, on DRE for a presidential election, in some precincts, they had a thunderbolt, 37% for president. And that means 100 people showed up, and they didn't. 37 did not vote for president. Now, if it was a small little race, I could understand that. Usually with optical scans, it's less than 1%.
I've answered this question. I haven't seen any equipment.
Okay. We're going to discuss that at one of our meetings about this situation.
All right, Joe, you can fade it there. One of the things that I picked up here, Brad, was that the guy who was under the gun there asking the question, John, asserted that it was faith-based voting.
Yes.
Was he channeling Brad Friedman?
Well, you know what? He might have been. I know he's a big Brad Blog fan, actually. I've spoken to him several times and have actually written about some of the work that he's done out there in Arizona. So he could have picked that up from me, or, heck, even vice versa. Who can keep track anymore? But, boy, isn't that something? That's what you get when you want to ask your election officials how the elections are being run. I mean, I've never seen anything like that. The guy.
And I believe that he asked if Brad Nelson had signed it. He didn't assert that he had.
I listened to it, and we've actually have the full transcript as much as we could get it with all the crosstalk over at Brad Blog. No, he never said that the guy's name was on the contract. I think he said that they had the contract, and in fact, that these machines are in fact coming in, which Brad Nelson pretty much concurs with, but then, you know, decides to punt the issue by saying, oh, I can't tell you anything about them until we actually get the machines here in the county, essentially.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing, and unfortunately, we see that kind of behavior from a lot of election officials. I don't want to imply that they are trying to hide something. They may be, but it may just be that they're in way over their head and they don't know how to deal with these type of questions.
And our Secretary of State, Bruce McPherson, might act this way if he actually showed up at one of the meetings related to electronic voting and certification of machines. Brad, we're going to take a break and return. Want to talk about the whistleblower Sabelle Edmonds, a great American, and a few other issues that are on the Brad blog these days. If you have a question or comment for Brad, join us on the phone. You know the number. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market.
So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop. You're invited to tune in to Talking Matters with Dr. Joan Kenley Saturday at 3 on KRXA 540. You won't want to miss the show on Whose Body Is It Anyway? Whose Body Is It Anyway is the title of Joan's acclaimed book, published by Newmarket Press and available on Amazon and other internet bookstores. You'll hear Joan and her guests explore smart, alternative, and traditional health choices for your total well-being. The idea is to stay healthy as long as you can, knowing as much as you can. Both men and women will want to hear about the medical controversy and confusion you're faced with day in and day out. You'll hear the real story behind some of the headlines that often lead you to dangerous health conclusions. Joan will cover what doctors you can trust, the latest in the hormone therapy media misinformation mess, and what you may not know about breast cancer treatments. Talking Matters with Dr. Joan Kenley, Saturdays at 3 on KRXA 540.
I'm Scott Dick, your host of the Tasty Planet Show. Saturdays from 1 to 3 p.m., we'll explore Monterey Bay regional wine and food, markets, restaurants, menus, and prices. I'll interview winemakers, chefs, and other key players. We'll put food and wine together, and then we'll take them apart. If it's handcrafted beer or goat's milk and it's good, let's talk about it. Join me every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. to discuss food, wine, and fun in the Monterey Bay region, an especially delicious slice of our Tasty Planet. Sponsored in part by Kitchen Studio.
Imagine how nice it would be if your mortgage broker knew as much about the ins and outs of specialized lending programs as your trusted mechanic knows about your car. A mortgage broker willing to take the time to open the hood of your financial strengths while checking under the engine for costly money leaks. Make sure your mortgage broker has the experience, integrity, and know-how to provide you the optimal financial tune-up for your particular circumstances. Giving you staying power over the long haul and the capacity to take advantage of life's opportunities as they chance to appear.
Hi, I'm Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage in Salinas. Let me help you fine-tune your future real estate plans. The price of gasoline is through the roof, but interest rates are still near all-time lows. Don't let this opportunity pass you by. Give me a call today at 757-0436. 757-0436. I'm Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage and looking forward to working with you.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. We know that our children learn by playing, and the caring staff at Thinker Toys will help you choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. Stop by our beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos and the just renovated Thinker Toys at Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily from 10 to 7.
You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show, our weekly visit with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. You can join the conversation. Lines available 831-899-5792 for the Central Coast. Elsewhere, dial us toll-free at 1-888-579-2540. That's 888-579-2540. And some days I feel like I live in a parallel universe. This is the day that Randy Duke Cunningham was sentenced to 8 years, 4 months in federal prison for corruption. And this is the day that the United States Senate rejected a proposal for an independent ethics watchdog in Washington, D.C. They just don't frickin' get it. Brad, your comment? I mean, this is amazing. The only open question now is whether Duke gets to take the rolls up to Lompoc to report for his prison term.
Yeah, and I think it's the, my understanding is the longest prison term ever given to a congressman.
I think that's true.
Yeah, well, I guess I'm appointed as the independent analyst of this sort of thing these days.
Well, and this is mind-boggling in certain ways because Joe Lieberman is hardly my favorite Democrat. But he recognized that integrity is an issue, and he joined up with Susan Collins, and they put together a package that was defeated in the Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee on a vote of 11-5. And this, you know, is an effort to try to put some teeth in the process in Washington, because we have ethics committees in the House and the Senate that are completely locked down and worthless.
They are doing absolutely nothing. It's extraordinary, with ethics violations like I don't believe we've ever seen. Perhaps you could go back to Teapot Dome or something, but I don't think we've ever seen this kind of corruption in Congress.
Brad, forgive me, I have to contradict you.
Excuse me.
Oh, sorry. That wasn't supposed to happen. Citing a higher power, George Voinovich, the senator from Ohio.
Yeah.
Quote, "The ethics committee is already doing those things, and it doesn't need any help because it's doing a thorough job of enforcing the Senate rules."
Well, if it came from an elected official out of Ohio, then you know it must be true. Not to pick on your own home state there, Peter. But,
oh, we deserve it. Sorry.
I mean, yeah, it's just unprecedented. And, you know, but the good news, I think we may have talked about this, but it seems to be finally catching up with them. I think they can only really hold off this tsunami for, you know, so much longer. If you saw the polls that came out just yesterday, actually, three different polls came out, all pegging Bush in the approval rating in the 30s.
Right,
you know, the
30s.
Few days before they were saying that CBS poll was an anomaly. But here we had three other polls that came out, all pretty much confirming the same thing. And in all of those polls, it showed that the American people strongly support Democrats over Republicans for the November 06 elections, including in the reddest of red states. They're still leaning heavily towards seeing the Democrats take over the Congress. Now, whether or not they can do that is, given the voting situation that we talk about here every week, is another matter entirely. But
and it's worth noting that in those polls, Shotgun Dick Cheney scores the lowest approval rating of a national figure in American polling history at 18%. I'll just fire a warning shot for that.
Yes, and leave it to Fox News. I believe it was Charles Krauthammer trying to point out the good side of that. He said, and I'm trying to quote as much as I can remember it the other day on Brett Hume, who is in denial about these polls, by the way. Krauthammer said, "The vice president of the United States shoots a man in his face, and his ratings are as high as 18%. That's pretty good." So always finding the positive side of things over at Fox News, where they also, you may have noticed, was it last week, they said, civil war in Iraq, could it be a good thing?
I heard about that.
Yeah, only on Fox. By the way, I've got some breaking news for you if you have a moment.
Okay, but first, I want to, we'll come to that in a second, but I wanted to just complete a thought here about the vice president. Because as I pointed out when we started a few minutes ago, you really broke and framed the story about the shooting accident in Texas. And one of the things that we've been struggling with is just how many beers Dick Cheney and his hunting buddies had.
Right.
And Capitol Hill Blue, which is a website based in the District of Columbia, and, you know, it's not held as entirely credible by every source I've talked to, nonetheless reported that Secret Service agents have been quoted as saying that Cheney was seriously inebriated at the time he pulled the trigger, and that the entire group had been drinking heavily all day.
Well, here's the problem. And first, I share the concern about Capitol Hill Blue, although I do read it from time to time because they come up with the most delicious gossip. Unfortunately, it's almost always unsourced, so you kind of have to take it with a grain of salt. But look, this is what they set themselves up for by refusing to speak to authorities for, what was it, 14 hours or so, you know, until the next day.
Yeah.
So, you know, they really have only themselves to blame about this. And, you know, the mishandling on just one thing after another is finally catching up to them, to the point where there was a story today on Knight Ritter you know, that spoke about the folks in the GOP are getting pretty ticked off. I even saw a column from GOP USA. You remember Jeff Gannon's old
outfit. Oh, right, yeah.
Bobby Eberle, one of the, well, what should we call him? One of the highest level operatives in that whole Republican neocon scam. Even he is now coming out and saying, hey, this White House doesn't seem to know what they're doing. They're off message. They can't get caught up. Guess what? It's not the message. It's what they're doing, and they're not going to get caught up, I shouldn't think, because, you know, everything is finally catching up with them. And we've been talking about this now for months, all of these scandals and screw-ups, and, you know, they just can't keep running anymore. I think it's only going to get worse. I don't think we're going to see those poll numbers come back up. I think they're just going to get worse.
Now, Brad, I haven't forgotten about your breaking story, but we're going to drag this out for another minute or two because Bill from Big Sur is on the line, and he wants to talk about some issues that have been reported by Capitol Hill Blue. That's why I brought that up. Bill, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Peter. I'm right here.
Okay, we're listening. Go right ahead, sir.
Earlier on the Ed Schultz show, they were talking with Dr. Frank, who wrote Bush on the Couch, Inside the Mind of the President.
Mm-hmm.
Just very briefly, I was in Paris last year and went by a bookstore called Brentano's on the Champs-Élysées, which they calls itself the American bookstore in Paris.
I've been there, yeah.
And I saw this book on the shelf, and I said, my goodness, I got to have this.
Mm-hmm.
And I read it, and even now, I do not like George Bush. I think he's a miserable person. Having read this book, though, I now seem to have a certain amount of pity for him.
Oh, gosh.
Because of what happened to him. A lot of it is a result of his mother and the thing with his sister dying and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
But he's a very pathetic person. In this book, George Bush, Bush on the Couch, one would think that it having been written by a psychiatrist that this would be a really hard read and it must be very lengthy. Including the epilogue, it's only some, 220 pages, 230 pages.
Yeah, I made it through.
I urge everyone, Republican, Democrat, whoever you are, to try to get a copy of this book and read it. And I must confess, even myself, I mean, of course, all the doctors are wrong, and I'm perfectly normal. That's a joke. But I did find even myself in a couple lines here and there in the book. And I just urge everyone to try to get a copy of it. I did not find Dr. Frank as being vindictive or out to get him or anything like that. It was just a very clinical analysis.
Well, I've interviewed the doctor twice, and he's very careful.
He
doesn't make, you know, real sweeping allegations. He makes it clear that he's never met the president and does not make clinical evaluations, but that he's working entirely from the public record. And based on that record, he draws certain inferences and analyses, and I think he's highly credible.
Yes. And it's here in the States, just to plug it, it's only $14.95 is the list price.
Okay.
And I'm sure it's very available for anyone who wants to get a copy.
Yeah.
On another note, to go back to 9/11, I don't think that anyone in their right mind would have allowed those events to take place as they occurred. But I can't help but wonder, with what's now come out in regards to Katrina and everything else, that they didn't know that something was going to happen and possibly allowed it to take its course. Now, in the intelligence field, they have what's called OBE, which is overtaken by events.
Mm-hmm.
And things just occurred, and they got way out of hand. But that they may have known that something was going to happen, and they saw it as an opportunity to get at Saddam.
Well, Bill, there's a whole lot to talk about there, and I don't have enough time right now, but I would point you to David Ray Griffin's book called The New Pearl Harbor and his subsequent publication, which analyzed the failures of the 9/11 Commission. And I cannot tell you what the correct conspiracy theory is about who, you know, managed those events and what role the Bush administration might have had. But I can say flatly that the stories we've been told about what happened on 9/11 and their causes are riddled with inaccuracies and misleading ideas. And one has to suspect that there's much more to the story. I can't say what much more there is, but the simple questions of how did Building 7 come down when it wasn't hit by an airplane, and how did the damage to the Pentagon occur when the hole in the wall was not big enough to accommodate a commercial airliner, those are questions that maybe we'll learn the answers to in 20 or 30 years. Bill, thanks a lot for the call. I got to move along here.
Okay.
And Brad has a breaking news story, and we're going to get it on right now. Brad, go right ahead.
Well, it turns out that, as usual, as they like to do, I think you mentioned it earlier in the show, a late Friday news release here.
Oh, it's the Friday afternoon bomb.
Yes, sir. And I just got this, actually, while we were on the air in the first segment. So I haven't had the time to read the entire letter yet, but it appears that the state of Florida has now, the elections state elections board there has now released a technical advisory warning about the memory cards on the Diebold voting machines down there, where you know they had the machines were hacked down in Leon County, as elections director Ian Sancho allowed a controlled experiment. It's notable, from what I can tell so far, they don't mention in this advisory anything about any companies in particular. They don't mention Diebold. They don't mention the hack down there in Leon County. However, they're putting out a technical security advisory concerning the security procedures used to store the memory cards down there. As far as I can tell, this is really the first official announcement or acknowledgement by the state that they've got some problems down there with those electronic voting machines.
And Brad, I'm going to say it so you don't have to, you won't appear to be gloating.
Yeah.
You told us so.
I have been doing so, haven't I?
Yes, you have. We're going to take a break and return with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Still room for your call with a comment or a question. 831-899-5792 or toll-free 888-579-2540. It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
Are you having a problem making your home loan payments? Do you have equity to protect? At your wit's end, trying to figure out how you'll be able to keep your home? Would you like to speak to a highly qualified loan agent who does not charge for advice? Hi, I'm John Sullivan of Executive Financial Services in Salinas. We can advise you about negotiating with your lender, and believe me, most lenders would rather negotiate with you than own your home. We can advise you about the foreclosure process and bankruptcy filings. If you need us, you can call us 7 days a week between 10 and 7 at 443-7277. We personally answer the phone and don't pre-screen our calls. We're here to give you advice. We can give you your options 5 minutes after reviewing your credit report. We might be able to help you. We might not be able to help you. But if you never call us, you'll never know. That's 443-7277 for a five-minute solution. Executive Financial Services at 443-7277.
We're go. Tom Hartman.
Chairman of Citicorp, Sanford Weill, he says, I think companies are realizing that we all have to be salesmen for America and not just sit back and rely on the government. I would point out to Mr. Weill, chairman of Citigroup, that his company is sending American jobs to other countries.
It's the Tom Hartman program.
Isn't this a great thing? We can use Indian labor for white-collar jobs while we're using Chinese labor for blue-collar jobs. I'm sorry, this just creeps me out.
Tom Hartman on KRXA 540.
I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet Radio Show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I'll bring you interesting topics and personalities from the world of food, wine, and fun. Guests on the Tasty Planet have included wine experts, winemakers, restaurateurs, famous chefs, and others that have made the Monterey Bay region such a delicious slice of our Tasty Planet. Sponsored in part by PG Liquors at 229 Grand in Pacific Grove. Stop by today for all your quality beverage needs and ask them about their single malt scotch tasting on March 22nd. And tell them the Tasty Planet sent you.
KRXA 540, checking your traffic at 549. Here's Amy Knight.
It's still very busy out there, North 17 after Lowell Road, an accident clearing from the left lane, CHP running a traffic break beginning at Glenwood. Also, Rio Del Mar Boulevard at Clubhouse Drive, a three-car crash now being reported. Looks like all of the drivers exchanging information off to the side. Also, Soquel Drive at Trout Gulch Road, still a crash in the clearing stages. And in Monterey, eastbound 68 at Highway 1, a broken-down car blocks the right lane. A new medical emergency, northbound 101 just before Orchard Lane in Prunedale, and may have the right lane blocked. This report brought to you by McDonald's. From the premium chicken sandwiches to the chicken McNuggets made with white meat, you can trust McDonald's for carefully inspected, top-quality chicken. Taste the difference today, only at McDonald's. Have a safe drive home. Amy Knight with traffic on KRXA 540.
We're in the home stretch here, the Peter B. Collins Show on a Friday afternoon, and I guess I've got it on my mind. Coming Tuesday, I feel better. Even my old man looks good. Wednesday just don't go. Thursday goes too slow. I got Friday on my mind. Gonna have fun in my city. I've got a hankering for some Dungeness crab tonight. I think that's what it's going to be. We continue with Brad Friedman. You can read all about it at bradblog.com. He blogs 24/7, and I don't know how he does it all. He managed to sit in for the Young Turks again this week on that satellite radio thing, and he's with us here again this afternoon. Brad, tell us about your recent conversation with Sabelle Edmonds. She is a woman who I have a great deal of respect for, an American citizen of Turkish birth, who worked at the FBI as a translator, and when she went to her superiors to report some misdeeds by fellow workers, when she went to blow the whistle on her boss, who was erasing her translations in order to build up a backlog so they could get a bigger budget out of the Congress in the following year, well, she was gagged. And now, according to Bradblog, she's going to speak. She's dying to speak.
Well, yeah, as a matter of, well, I wish you would use a different phrase there.
Sorry.
But she would like to tell her story. And, yeah, you pretty much pegged it. And actually, this goes back to the caller before the break and discussing some of the concerns about the story surrounding 9/11 and so forth. She's got quite a bit that she would like to talk about that she heard. She joined the FBI just after 9/11 when they were hiring a whole bunch of translators. She had actually applied several years before, and the FBI bungled her application, and she never heard back from them for a year. Eventually, she ended up joining when they, you know, needed a whole bunch of new translators, and she listened to a whole bunch of audio tapes that were recorded out of Chicago and elsewhere, as I understand it. A lot of them referred to 9/11 and some things that occurred prior to 9/11, some things that the FBI may have known about and so forth. And she would like to talk about all of this, but it's a very strange case. The Department of Justice has slapped this state secrets privilege on everything that she has to say. In a very strange way, in fact.
Right. Including reclassifying or classifying documents that were never secret, like the letter from Leahy and I guess it's Pat Roberts.
Leahy and Grassley, I think.
Thank you.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
Chuck Grassley, who are supporters of hers. And not just letters that they had, that the senators had up on their website, but in fact, 60 Minutes did a profile of Sabelle Edmonds, and it aired on CBS, and later on the Department of Justice figured out some way to retroactively classify that 60 Minutes story.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I don't know how they accomplished that. Of course, you can see the actual 60 Minutes story. I'm posting classified information on the Brad blog that way, but
you know,
but
the Peter B. bail bond service will be available for you, Brad.
Yeah, I think I may need it with some stuff, including stuff I've got coming up, Peter. But in any case, she would like to tell her story. She's taken the case all the way to the Supreme Court, who refused to hear the case. And by the way, as she was moving towards the Supreme Court, the Department of Justice used that state secrets privilege whenever they were arguing against her. They would actually remove her and her attorneys from the courtroom when they wanted to make their case. So she didn't even have the right to hear what this, you know, what the case was against her, so to speak. She would like to tell all, and having not gotten the opportunity to do so via the courts, she's taking what's really just about her last option here, which is to convince Congress to allow her to testify in open hearings. She'd like it to be a joint judiciary, Senate and House Judiciary Committee investigation and hearings, so she can tell what she knows. And apparently it's a whole lot of important stuff. So she currently has a petition set up. If you go to bradblog.com, you can link over to that petition and let your lawmakers know you would like to hear what this courageous national security whistleblower has to say.
And I've talked to her on many occasions, and I have to say she puts to shame so many Americans who believe they love their country, believe that they, you know, are participants in a constitutional democracy. And she's just inspiring, and I hope that she does get vindicated and get to speak, because we need to hear what she has to say. And Jake wants us to hear what he has to say. Jake in Arcata, you're on the air. Good afternoon.
Hey, Peter and Brad. I'd just like to comment about Sybil. Sybil Edmonds is an American hero. You know, she's put herself on the line in a very real way to tell the American people the truth about what this government knew prior to 9/11. And there's another issue there that's been going around, is that she translated conversations that showed that there was foreign money being given to our Speaker of the House, Dennis Hastert. Apparently there's rumors going around there was money from Turkish sources. We all know about the bribery scandals inside the Republican Party with Abramoff and Duke Cunningham, but apparently Dennis Hastert has his own problems.
Well, he got several hundred thousand dollars worth of political campaign contributions, which were under the reporting limit. They were under $200. So people give $195, $196, $198, but never over $200, and it didn't trigger reporting on the identity of the donors. And it is a very interesting case, and it's one of those that appears to be stalled in those ethics committees that work so well on Capitol Hill.
Yeah, he doesn't have to disclose the names of those donors because it falls under that $200 limit.
Yeah. Jake, thanks for pointing that out. We're tight for time, so I will dismiss you now. And he's a good sport. He can handle that. I want to just tease a couple of items that people can read about at Bradblog. Bill Richardson, the governor of New Mexico, who'd like to be your next president, has signed a bill guaranteeing a paper ballot for all voters in New Mexico. Also, you note that a Diebold whistleblower is facing 3 felony counts. That's the guy here in California, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. So I want people to read up on those. And, Blad, I have one to share with you before the music rolls here.
Yeah.
There's a great American from Texas, a retired school teacher named Walter Senge or something like that, and he moved to Rhode Island a couple of years ago. And he and his wife rolled up some credit card debt. They decided to unload some of it. So they sent a check to their JCPenney Platinum MasterCard company for $6,522. But it turns out that amount of money is out of line because they don't typically pay that much on their card. And the company reported that to the Department of Homeland Security. And they would not post the check until Homeland Security said that it was okay. And this is just another case of creeping police state activities, and it reminds me of the extension of the Patriot Act. Only 10 senators voted against it, which is shameful, and our own Barbara Boxer, for some reason, voted for this extension of the Patriot Act. Next time we have a chance, I'll ask her why. But this is the big brotherism that we've been warned about, and it is here and happening now.
It certainly is, and I've never been one who's used that illusion and, you know, talked about a fascist state and about the Orwellian world, you know, that we're heading towards. But, you know, perhaps I should have been talking about that, because clearly that's where we are. A case like the one you pointed out is just absolutely bizarre. And
well, practice these words in the shower: fascism and police state, because I think we're going to need them, Brad.
Yeah,
thanks for joining me today. We'll talk next Friday.
Enjoy your crab, my friend.
All right, Brad Friedman. Visit bradblog.com or else.
Happy trails to you.
Are you looking for money for college? Every year, billions of dollars in financial aid go unclaimed because parents just don't know how to properly access those funds. Mistakes are made in filling out applications. Deadlines are overlooked. And ultimately, it's the student who loses out on desperately needed funds. R.J. Moyer, president of AboutCollegeFunding.com, offers solutions to your financial aid dilemma.
If you're the parent of a college-bound high school junior or senior, critical deadlines are rapidly approaching, and we do specialize in late-stage college funding planning. Regardless of your income, assets, or home equity, I can help you send your child to the college of his or her choice without spending your life savings. But you must take action now.
AboutCollegeFunding.com is now offering free one-hour consultations for parents in need of answers. Call 1-888-337-9775. That's 1-888-337-9775.
Remember, the early bird gets the cash.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Lou Maligano. Prosecutor Jason Forge in San Diego on the end of the run for former Congressman Randall Duke Cunningham.
Today's sentence is a sad but well-deserved ending to Mr. Cunningham's public career.
I'm Bob Fuss on Capitol Hill. Previous bribery cases involving members of Congress pale in comparison, both in terms of the amount and the brazenness. Cunningham, a Republican from San Diego, admitted taking $2.5 million in cash and luxury goods for getting defense contracts for the companies that paid him. He got a yacht, a Rolls Royce, expensive homes, and antiques to furnish them. There was even a price list on congressional stationery in which Cunningham indicated the more he got, the bigger the contracts he'd deliver.
The 8 years, 4 months in prison given Congressman Randy Cunningham, the longest ever given a standing or former congressperson. Technology patent holder NTP didn't get the $126 million it sued for. It got $612.5 million, an out-of-court deal with BlackBerry developer Research in Motion. So the judge in the case that could have shut down your BlackBerry was dismissed. CBS News legal consultant Andrew Cohen.
Both companies had a huge incentive to get some sort of a deal done, to get some certainty to the bottom line, to be able to move forward and use their resources to new adventures. So I'm not surprised by this. I think the judge is not surprised by this. And I'm imagining even the negotiators knew at some point they would get together and make a deal.
The deal averts a possible court-ordered shutdown of the BlackBerry system across the U.S. The troops in Pakistan today had to take the initiative with the crowds. Thousands turned out chanting, "Go Bush, go," and had to be turned away by tear gas firing troops. President Bush is there, and so is CBS News correspondent Jim Axelrod.
After safely getting Mr. Bush in and out of Afghanistan for a few hours to visit U.S. troops earlier this week, the Secret Service is now dealing with a presidential overnight in perhaps an even more dangerous place. The day after a suicide bomber killed four in front of the U.S. consulate in Karachi, the president is in Pakistan to discuss ways to better target that kind of terror.
But that was Friday. It's Saturday morning in Pakistan, where President Bush is spending the day with President Musharraf. He'll also meet with business leaders and watch cricket, all with extraordinary security. So just who are they? Now you can know. In spite of some protests,